You know what this is like? It's like those old movies we both love.
Now I'm going to tell you my whole plan, and then I'm going to come up with some absurd and convoluted way to kill you, and you'll find an equally convoluted way to escape.
Sounds good to me.
Well, this ain't that kind of movie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another movie podcast, a show that loves, actually, its original title. It was called Another for the Movie of the Podcast. I'm Oscar, and with me today is...
Ralph.
You don't get it?
No.
War for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, because you said it of the...
Yeah. Another for the movie of the... Come on. I thought it was clever. Fuck me, then. Choked up at my water. All right, I'm just going to leave it in there.
Yeah.
As this is episode number 28. Today's show will be reviewing, as I said, War for the Planet of the Apes.
Isn't it War of the Planet of the Apes?
Is it? No, it's War for.
I think it's War of the Planet of the Apes.
Fuck that.
I'll look it up.
Fuck this title, that's what I'm saying. Fine. People know what it is.
No, it's War for,
yeah. Yeah, motherfucker. Anyway, so we'll also be reviewing Olivier Assayas' latest film, Personal Shopper.
Isaias,
totally. If the European director, that movie's out on VOD right now.
European.
Yeah, and we'll conclude our review, our show today, with an up-to-date, latest, brand-new review of Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Which I find hard to believe, but yeah.
Right, it's a contradiction. It's like Little Giants.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Except the movie made sense because they were little.
But their giants. Hearts were big. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
You're such a you. Feedback can always be sent to podmoviecast@gmail.com. Podmoviecast is also the name of our Twitter feed. And otherpodcast.com is the website you can go for. That's like our main hub, guys. That's where all the info is. All the past shows, all the marathons, all the bonuses, all the top tens we've done, the most recent one, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, shit like that. Yeah, stickball. I don't know why I'm copying you. All this detailed show notes are available on every show that you download for this episode. You know, I said earlier that we're doing Valerian in the City of a Thousand Planets. I did find a showtime, so it should be fine, but haven't seen it yet in this recording. It's because we do that shit like, right after the movie, and we just end the show.
All right, we're just going to leave our mics here. Let it record.
The whole time.
And the whole time.
22
and
hours
then
later.
We're right, exactly. Back. We'll come back. Yeah.
Right, exactly. As always, we begin with more like the recent stuff we've been consuming over the last 2 weeks, right? Bi-weekly stuff. I only have one movie here for us, and it's a movie called... Where the fuck is my phone? That's over here. The movie's called The Big Sick, which you haven't seen, right, Ralph? Am I correct?
No, we almost went to go see it, but...
What happened?
We were going to go see it on Thursday night, but it wasn't still released anywhere Thursdays except for like early, because it wasn't a big enough show to watch or something, movie.
Yeah.
So we couldn't go anymore. Then I just got busy the weekend, and now it's this new week, yay.
And you still haven't seen it. That's all cool. I mean, I wanted to see The Big Isle as well. Like I almost did a double marathon, but I just could not afford it in that day to do it. I didn't have the time.
Sure.
Let me read the description here. Whoa, that's a big one. You know, it'll be the big one. Why not? It'll be fun. The Big Sick. Kumail Nanjiani, in the middle of becoming a budding stand-up comedian, meets Emily. Meanwhile, a sudden illness sets in, forcing Emily to be put into a medically induced coma. Kumail must navigate being a comedian, dealing with tragic illness, and placating his family's desire to let them fix him up with a spouse, while contemplating and figuring out who he really is and what he truly believes. I actually like that one. It's very nice. And again, it stars Kumail Nanjiani, who also co-wrote the film with Emily Gordon. That's her real name.
His
real wife. And she's not played. She's played by Zoe Kazan. She's not a... Because she's just a character in real life. She's not an actress.
Yeah.
Also stars Holly Hunter, Ray Romano, big actors. A bigger actor than that is Anupam Kher. I hope I didn't fuck that up. Sorry.
Solid.
Zenobia Shroff. Mm-hmm. Sorry again. And I'll stop there. Directed by Michael Showalter, the guy who did the camping funny movie. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Wet Hot American Summer. The show and the movie.
Never saw him.
I thought you did see him.
No,
it's just Luke and I. Luke and I love that movie. Those movies. He also did Hello, My Name is Doris.
Okay, I saw that.
You saw that. There's another one he did that I really love that no one really likes. I don't know. You said it was okay. I don't know if you still believe that. It's called...
Tell me the title. I can't tell you.
Because I'm looking for it. Jesus, this is me buying
Airtime?
Airtime, yeah, yeah, see.
Stalin, I see.
Oh, he directed an episode of Love. You haven't seen that either, have you?
I didn't like it.
Oh, yeah, that show was really hard. Really hard to watch.
Yeah.
No, I lost. Oh, They Came Together. He wrote They Came Together.
Which one's that?
It's with Amy Poehler and Paul Rudd.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you just hell-bent on loving that movie. And I was like, yeah, it's okay.
And you said it was just okay.
Right, but you're just... It's an amazing breakdown of a genre. The way you made it seem was like, you cared nothing for this movie. And I was like,
breakdown of a genre. Just because I'm excited for something. I don't,
right, but those, you don't have doesn't to have to belittle the fact that
yeah,
I...
Yeah, it does.
No.
So...
Regardless.
No, it's fine.
How was this movie you actually saw?
All movies are great. All these movies are great. This guy's good. No, it's probably, some people are saying, you know, the best romantic comedy, like, not ever, but they're saying in the last, God knows when, because romantic comedies are not really in existence anymore. It kind of fell by the wayside.
Yeah.
Whatever love in movies are taking place by other things. There's like love and action, love and spy movies, love and something else, right? Or usually comedy.
Well, this is based strongly. Obviously on a true story.
Very true. Apparently, the tours,
like his wife was there also to like make sure some of the shit went right or something like that.
I don't know. I haven't listened to podcasts with them too, but I really want to now. Especially after the movie came out, their interviews are really funny because they talk about like, well, he did kiss Zoe Kazan in front of me, like, or something.
Right.
But yeah, apparently some of the truer stuff that happens that's not in the movie is weirder. For example, like he actually, because it says that she was put in a medically induced coma halfway through the movie, maybe less. So it's not a big spoiler to say that. And she, in real life, he had to marry her.
That's in the trailer.
Yes, in the trailer. But yeah, in real life, he had to marry her to give consent to that. And the movie, he doesn't do that. He like, they think he's the husband, but he's not. And in real life, he had to marry her while she's in a coma when she did not want to marry him.
Oh, wow.
And then do that because no one was there. No, her family were in some other state. So that was funny. For example, like that's a little extra. Well,
how do you marry somebody in a coma?
I don't know how it happened. I don't know. I'm just saying that's what he said. I heard it.
Sure.
Said.
Yeah.
I have no idea how. Vegas, maybe? That's like Bernie's.
Oh my God.
Bernie's Adventures.
Right? I've never seen any of those movies, but yeah.
I've seen them, unfortunately.
But I've heard it many times.
So this movie is really good, is my point. It blends actual romantic and comedy exactly. Right down the middle, in a very nice way. Like it's a great smoothie of both those flavors. It's equal parts, I should say, and it's directed very tenderly. The movie's all like it feels as genuine as a real story.
I have a question.
It.
Does Camille have his like very puzzled look all the time?
He does do it a lot. He does it on stand up because like this is apparently it's weird because I don't know what you're supposed to take.
How do you
supposed to be today? But it feels like today.
It was supposed to be like 10 years ago, right?
Yeah, but like, was Uber around 10 years ago?
Yes.
Okay.
2017? No.
He's an Uber driver too.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So maybe 2010?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's like ticking up a little bit too.
Yeah.
And they have smartphones. Was that around 10 years ago? I don't think.
Yes.
Was this 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, they seem newer.
We're in 2017.
I know that, but they seem newer in the movie than what the story happened. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, Uber didn't come out until like 2010, 11 or something like that.
Yeah.
If I'm correct. And it was like really small.
Yeah, probably. Like, well, he was in New York, so I'm sure in New York.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, in New York.
It was up there.
Yeah.
Anyway, and yeah, all those devices are used for great effect. Like his stand-up comedian acts were funny in correlation to the emotional beats that he needed when he was meeting her, when he was dating her and loving her. And then when they broke up from the fight, which is a big fight and it's a big deal. Actually, it's about his character a lot more than it is about Emily. Like he has to... It's like this earning and this recognizing your mistakes in not your family, but not just your family, but in every person you come in contact with. And he has to own up to that shit. And that's the general message of the movie that he understands by the end of the movie, even if it's obvious for you.
Sure.
So yeah, the very powerful stuff, very nice. I mean, that's really cool. Like, you know that movie that we liked about those improv actors with Gillian Jacobs, and Key? Michael Key, whatever his name is.
Michael Key?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Remember when there's all this comedy troupe and one gets accepted to the Saturday Night Live version?
Yeah.
You know how they have a very emotional like scene in front of the whole audience?
Yep.
And she's doing it by herself?
Yeah.
There's a scene like that, for example. It's very similar where he's like breaking down, basically. And that's a really good scene. Surprisingly good for Kumail, who is just mainly a comedian.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's cool.
I can understand why people love this movie. I kind of love it too. I want to revisit it so bad. See, maybe it might crack my 10.
Oh, interesting. That's good.
Yeah. What did you see?
I stayed at home and watched Netflix. So I ended up watching Trolls. That's right. The 2016 movie, the big animated movie from what's that company? I already forgot. The same guys that do the fucking Minions movies and shit. Yeah. So, quick thing. It'll be super fast because the other one is like two paragraphs. After the Bergens invade Troll Village, Poppy, the happiest troll ever born, and the curmudgeon lonely Branch set off on a journey to rescue her friends. I would say their friends, but you're right. He doesn't have friends. This is starring Anna Kendrick as Poppy, Justin Timberlake as Branch, obviously, because he's a mixed singer, Zoe Deschanel as Bridget, Christopher Mintz Plasse as King Grishel, directed by Walton Dorn and another person, Mike Mitchell. That's interesting. But yeah, so basically, there's this weird group of people, the Bergens, right, who are basically the giants in this movie because trolls are super small, right?
Is this the Oscar-nominated trolls?
Yeah. This is what's it called? So the trolls are basically what they are, like little troll dolls, right? And they make fun of it in the beginning of the movie right away, and they never have to bring it up again, right?
Yeah.
Other than that, it's super lighthearted. I think it does a great job mixing the music with story.
Is it like a legit musical?
Oh, it's a legit musical.
Oh, okay, cool.
So it's like
Tangled or whatever.
It's like maybe 7 songs I think they put in there, 6 songs or something like that, and okay. they bring That's in cool. and like they do it really nice. And obviously, like our main people who are singing here, Anna Kendrick is mainly singing, and then Justin Timberlake as well. So we know they have Justin Timberlake has a really good voice, so it works out, right? And the song that's like the big popular song that Justin Timberlake make, the Can't Stop This Feeling or whatever.
It's a good, catchy song.
It's a really catchy song. That's not until the very end of the movie. Which is kind of cool because you kind of forget because you look for it in the first hour, right? Completely forget the rest, and then you're like, oh yeah, there it is, right?
Yeah, I can't even see my. That's how I would have looked at it,
like, right
at the beginning. Forget about it. Oh, delight!
Well, it has no. Well, you kind of feel it, like okay, it has to be this because you like where are we at in this movie, right? Like,
yeah.
And you kind of get mad if it wasn't in it because it's a catchy fucking song.
Yeah.
But it was a fun. It's a fun like this movie about. How the humans in this world are the curmudgeons people, what's it called? Not the curmudgeons people, the Bergens, they eat trolls, right? To make themselves happy. Because they feel that the trolls are happy people, happy things in general. So they think if they eat it, they'll become happy. And they do, right? But through false things. So they have once a year they eat trolls, right? So it starts off with the thing where they have them all locked up in this big tree where they live, right? It starts off that the trolls end up escaping, and they made dolls, troll dolls, as their decoys, which I thought was pretty cool in the beginning.
That's good.
Right. That's it. That's how you leave it at that after that, right? But anyways, they escape and whatever, and now it's like 10 years later, and whatever happened, what's it called? They're living happily in the forest, and they just... They're so happy. They make a too big of a party. They make so much noise that the Bergens find out where they are, and they catch them, and they go back to try to eat them too, so they can be happy because they think happiness comes from that. But the trolls have to teach them that happiness comes from inside, you know? So that's what it ends up being. But it's a fun movie. Leo totally fell asleep like 10 minutes in, but I still watched the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I heard that. I heard that adults this is one very not prestigious, but I would say prestigious, very prestigious critic who try to get everyone to watch that movie because everyone automatically dismissed it. Like, no, guys, it's really good. You'll love it. It's really fun. And I don't know how many people she convinced, but I certainly haven't seen it yet. But I'm glad you did, and I will catch it eventually, probably.
Yeah, it's fun, especially just because I think it does a great job mixing the music. And it is kind of like Tangled, I guess, if you want to look at it, or more recently.
That's just what it feels like more.
Sure.
I haven't seen either.
There is like the first two songs or so, it doesn't feel like or some of the songs, should I say, feel like they're just songs in there to be there, like they're singing because they're singing because it's a show, it's a time for them to sing, right? In comparison to like a random Disney movie where it's like, hey, this is supposed to be, you know, dialogue built into the song, right? Mm-hmm. But there is that also. So that's Trolls. But the other,
I think the most ever said about Trolls, by the way.
Right, exactly. The other show, other than the show, actually, I've been watching a show.
It's like a miniseries.
It is a miniseries.
Three part movie.
Four part series.
My bad.
On HBO, it's called The Defiant Ones. The Defiant Ones examines the partnership between Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre, one the son of a Brooklyn longshoreman, the other straight out of Compton, and their leading roles in a chain of transformative events in contemporary culture. And I got to say, the first episode hooked me to watch the second and third. And I stopped because I was like, Jesus Christ, I have to do things today. And then I finished the fourth. So
nice.
And yeah, so I finished the fourth just recently.
I know nothing to expect. I know the
So what's really cool is that you shouldn't have. I mean, this stars everybody that you can think of, Dr. Dre knows, right, or that ever worked with. They just do a... I'm assuming it's over, I don't know how long, a couple of years. I think it's from the filming of Straight Outta Compton till now. So they have a lot of stuff from there.
Oh, wow.
And they do a lot of like back stuff, backstory stuff, obviously. Most of it is the past. But it basically starts off, and I'll give you a quick thing of who Jimmy Iovine is now, is he's a businessman who helped make the deal, or not help make the deal, was part of the reason that they sold, Dr. Dre and him sold
Beats
for $3.6 billion to Apple.
Am I mistaken to think that Dr. Dre is the first rapper billionaire?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And they sold to Apple. And that's gigantic, obviously, right? So.
For sure.
You okay?
I have the hiccups. I'm trying to avoid them with the mic.
It's really continue. Bad. You're not.
I'm going to avoid using. There it goes. See, the more you talk to me, I hate you.
I know, it's the best. So it's really cool because you get to find out who... I mean, a lot of the stuff you know about Dr. Dre, or at least I think in culture, but you don't know anything about Jimmy Iovine. Most people wouldn't, right? And who this person was, how he ended up getting to work with amazing people, artists, as a producer, as a music producer, and making Interscope Records, for example, which I know you know what Interscope Records is, and how they just intertwined like their lives together, and how they changed completely to become businessmen and different from what they were when they were growing up. One was a producer, and obviously Dr. Dre was a producer also, and a rapper and everything, and now he's a businessman. Like, he doesn't do that stuff anymore. Like, yeah, he does. He did release something along with Straight Outta Compton, right? I think he released an album.
Yeah.
He did. It was, yeah. But he's produces more, you know, and he just, you know, runs his business. So it's a super cool, really in-depth look of... These two guys' lives, and everybody around them giving their story about them, and then telling you, yeah, that's right.
I have one question, and don't spoil any more.
Sure,
for me, but I have one question. This will help me shape, or maybe your listeners too, if they want to see it, if they haven't seen it yet. Would anyone that even if they aren't, if they're not interested in Dr. Dre or this, what's his name, the other guy,
Jimmy Iovine,
less of him probably. If they're not interested in him, will they still find this documentary series good or fascinating?
Yeah, because there's something about it where it's something special where it doesn't matter what it is that you like here. And it's not like it's cool seeing this. It's almost like any movie you see about the underdog making it, right?
Okay.
These are both underdogs who completely make it, right? Mm-hmm. And now you look at them and you're like, those aren't underdogs. Yeah, they were at one point.
Right.
Where they are now is just, sorry, they're the Giants now. Like, that's the big difference, you know? Right. And it's a complete underdog story about how they were never going to meant to succeed.
Right. Don't spoil anymore. That's cool.
You know?
I'll see it for sure.
It's cool.
I was going to see it anyway, but yeah, definitely more now.
Yeah.
I will definitely watch it.
It's a really cool show, and they call this season one. So I'm assuming they want to continue with this, the title of The Defiant Ones.
Sometimes they do that, though, and they will never bring anything.
Yeah, but I think they might.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. The Defiant Ones on HBO. And it's only a four-part, right? All the parts are out, right?
All the parts are out, yeah.
It's not releasing anyway? Okay.
I think they were doing them released every Sunday on air, if you wanted to watch them. But if you have HBO Now or Go, they're on there.
Right, they're all on there. All right, cool. So that's what we've been watching. That's some of the recent stuff we've been doing. Let us carry forth here, Ralph, with our first movie film-length review here of Olivier Assayas's, I hope I said that right, Personal Shopper.
What are you doing in Paris?
I'll take it. This too.
It's 500 for the belt and 2,000 for each bag.
Great. I'm a personal shopper. Kira's very high profile.
Hey, Kira.
She can't do normal things, so I assist her.
You have nothing better to do besides dress Kira?
I'm waiting.
What are you waiting for?
My twin brother was dying here.
It's been 95 days.
We made this oath. Whoever died first would send the other a sign.
From the afterlife.
Has that always been there?
Lewis, are you here?
A personal shopper in Paris refuses to leave the city until she makes contact with her twin brother who previously died there. Her life becomes more complicated when a mysterious person contacts her via text message. A strange thing. Written and directed by Olivia Sayas. Starring Kristen Stewart, Lars Eidinger, Sigrid Bouazizi, so fuck French names, man. Anders Janssen Lee. And Ty Oldwyn. Those are the ones I remember the most, for the most part. Definitely just Kristen Stewart. She is in, I think, every frame, if not every scene. And it's available right now to rent or buy on VOD of your choice.
So she's definitely in every scene.
In every scene, that's right. Complicated movie. I chose it just because I think in Olivia Assayas' film, it's he is... I mean, by no means big enough for a household name. He's not Spielberg. But he is big enough where even marginally cinematically influenced people who love movies, still know about his work enough where, like, it's almost like a little treat of event every year when he comes out with a movie. Like, you'd want to see it. Everyone watches movies. It's like a thing. It's like an action movie or like a Fast and Furious series.
Sure.
So that's how it is to me. That's how we treat it, kind of. It's like, oh, an Olivia Assayas movie night. Again, it's also consistent. Every year or two, it was... squeezes one out. And his last, I've only seen four of his films, maybe five, I think, because I know movie.com had a few of his films running for a while.
Marathon.
And I've seen Carlos, The Clouds of Sils Maria, as I mentioned. No, I never mentioned it here. And
and our pre-show, yeah.
And our pre-show stuff, yeah. And other, there was another weird one with, okay, I'm just going to keep forgetting if I keep thinking.
Sure.
So, Personal Shopper is a strange movie. All his movies are always like, not strange like this, but they're all different. He likes to approach different things. He likes to challenge himself, I think, in his writing and his cinema stuff and the way he plays with the camera. I think the camera work in this movie is probably as essential as Kristen Stewart's acting. We'll talk about what I think about the camera.
Yeah, there's this one scene specifically that I feel like they want to do something with the camera really bad. Like it was like playing a really trick, and I'll bring it up in a bit. Yeah.
So, seeing as I'm more familiar with the man than you are, I figure I should ask you more because you're not as familiar.
Did you say ask a you?
No, that's not what I said. What did you think of Personal Shopper? By the way, hiccups are gone, son.
Yeah, I know. Sad.
Bitch.
What did I think?
Personal Shopper. Yeah. I mean, without spoilers yet, of course.
Yeah, I think the title is fucking bland as shit. But besides that, it's a weird movie that you don't know what to make of for at least the first 40 minutes. Because are we just watching in the life of this? Is there supposed to be something behind it, right? It doesn't feel like anything. Besides, I guess, the beginning where you get this weird thing where you find out that Kristen Stewart's a medium. And that's the type of message that she's trying to get from her twin brother who just recently died. She's just trying to get a message from
like 3 months before the movie starts, I think.
Right.
So let's go like after the mourning period.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
After the shock of it, I mean.
Right. You don't have to see her mourning. You don't have to see her or anything like that.
And it's from a defect that she also possesses, too. We should say that.
They do, yeah. They do bring that up also.
They do bring a
congenital. They mention it a couple times, but they do bring it up one big scene where they go to the doctor.
Exposition scene.
Yeah, exactly.
No, not that. It's when he's talking to this Ingo. The German boyfriend of the star that she is personal shopping for.
That's right. And then right
that's
after
a bigger
that,
one because that's when we get more, that's right. The most clear information.
That is the most clear information. Right. Then after that, you get the doctor.
Like 20 minutes in the movie or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, you were saying.
Right. It's weird because like you you don't know, like, it's just a weird, it's a weird movie because you don't know what it wants to do. I don't know if this movie wants to be a horror movie at the same time of, is it a supernatural movie? Like, it's weird where it balances, right? And I just didn't know where it was going in that first, like, 30, 40 minutes of the movie. But after that, you kind of get a clearer vision. And you, I mean, in the end, we're just, it's, I guess it's in the life of this moment, and what she's dealing with and everything else that's happening, right? Of Kristen Stewart's character. So, yeah, I mean, it was interesting to say the least. I didn't hate it, but I don't know where I stand with it.
Okay, I'm going to possess a theory for you as far as what I was thinking. Not theory, but just a notion, is that this movie is a straight up thriller horror. It's not, there is nothing around it that's, it's just because it's directed strangely in a strange land that we don't know. It just doesn't mean that the genre is not there all the time. Like, I think it focuses on horror, not at jump scares, not at effects, right?
Sure.
It's jumped, like, between texts, like the nature of waiting for the text of someone you don't know that could be potentially dangerous for you.
Sure.
In between them is the horrifying aspect. The fact that the ghost just jumps off, or in the background you didn't notice that the glass was moving and it gets dropped in the middle of nowhere. No one's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are so it's a horror movie, or at least a thriller, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's in the way that it's the sense of danger, or at least peril, for personal shopper, like, it's her fucking name, for Kristen Stewart's character,
yeah,
for PS, you know. Yeah, for her, it's I think it's just an important, we're in her head so much, and oftentimes the camera is never showing us what she's looking at, or the camera's often showing us what she's not looking at, so it comes up on her, even if we do see a little bit of it in the background before she notices. And I think those things are the French version of horror, you know, or Olivia Sayas' version of horror.
Sure.
So I think it's not the weeping or the new, what, or the eye or whatever. It's not bloody or anything like that. It's not at all fantastic or bombastic, I meant to say. But it's there. And I think if you look at it, that it is that genre solidly, maybe the movie will make more sense. Does that make sense to you? If I'm trying to clarify it for you, at least the way I looked at it. That make more sense to you?
No, you're adding more labels than it needs to.
No, I mean, because we have to. Every movie lives in a genre, no matter what.
Sure, yeah, of course, so. that's the truth. But the way I see it more is that instead of you're saying it's horror or whatever, because see, I was trying to pin something to it, right? Because I just want to know what kind of movie I'm watching in the end, right? And obviously, whatever it is, I don't care.
Like, well, like any movie who has one main actor is about the main actor.
Right, exactly. What I'm saying, right. But what I'm saying is that in the end, this movie ended up being more, I guess, for you, so you said thriller horror, right?
Yeah.
I say more, more not, it's a more of an adventure for her. It's just because of the fact that she's, it's just what's going on through her life in the end, right? And this is what it is for her real life, if you think of it, right? That's why I said it's also a snapshot of her life. Earlier. Mm-hmm. So for her, that's why there's no crazy horror thing. What feels horror is that she's in a fucking house with no lights on, right? And she's trying to like feel a presence, right?
Yeah.
And that's horrific for anybody. Like, I don't want it to be in a house with no lights on. I can't see anywhere. Like, that's
I kind of like that.
No, I don't. I kind of don't.
Okay.
Right? So that's for me.
No,
right? Yeah,
but you're right. That's right. How it works in the movie.
Exactly. So, and then there's also like the feeling of, well, she's feeling lonely. She's feeling a bunch of other extra
things. Also, her trying out clothes also is kind of makes you have your pump point because of the way she
does
exactly.
It. I just, like I said, the way I see it is it's more of her and what's happening in her life. And it just, some of the aspects happen to be horror. Some of the aspects happen to be, but in reality, it's just her life. And it could be any of our lives. It's just as simple. It's just that her life is a little bit more complicated because she has like she's a medium, I guess, right? Or so she calls herself, but she doesn't think she is.
A bit of a spoiler that she retracts that statement from earlier where she's more solid in saying that she's a medium. Later, she takes it back.
She does
like she is like second guessing herself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She does take it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she is attuned. Right. Let's go with that.
So the main question, as always, before we get into spoilers for any review, especially of a movie that no one's really heard of, at least no one that I know, would you recommend this movie? And to what kind of people would find this movie good or fascinating?
Anybody who likes Kristen Stewart? Because she gets naked a couple of times?
Yeah, but that's not enough.
Right. Agreed.
Because if that's what you're looking for, the movie's very bad for you.
Right.
Very boring. Yeah, she is naked. And, yeah, she goes to the doctor's
once. Luke wouldn't like this
movie. She changes her clothes.
I don't think Luke would like this movie. I don't care about that. So,
yeah.
Your standard person who goes to the movies every so often to see Transformers, I would say no.
What the doy?
What I'm saying.
Yeah, you can say that about anyone.
You can't say that about a lot of people. Sad to say, a lot of people wouldn't like this movie.
What's the biggest strength of this movie? Is it her performance? Is it the weird nature of it? Is it, I don't know, the...
I think it's a mix of her performance and her and the movie's or the director's job. How the director decides to bring up the how the story goes, right? Because he wrote it also, right?
Yeah, he did.
Or the writer, should I say? How it ends up coming up to like where it changes to like. It feels realistic. Like, nothing felt like her reaction to escaping from the cops, for example. From escaping to that one scene, right? That she has to go to the cops. Mm-hmm. That's a great reaction. And I was like, come on. Like, I almost felt really like the movie almost took me out of it right away when she ran.
That was good because I don't think I've ever seen Kristen Stewart perform in that kind of scenes before.
Right.
So I mean, I already kind of bogged her down as a really good actress.
Yeah.
But I keep seeing facets of her.
Like, sure.
Her range.
Yeah. There's something about her and what the movie ends up giving you, like what you see, because you mentioned something about we always see something in the background, something weird, right, or something that she doesn't notice, or she notices a little bit. We notice it a little bit before her,
right? If we pay attention,
exactly. Right. Which I think the movie does a really good job. So there's a little bit of that, and what her performance is. That's what I think I really like about the movie.
Okay. Cool, that's good.
But I hate to say it, I think a lot of people, your layman, would not like this movie because a lot of people do not like to pay too much attention to things. But your person who does like a horror movie or likes more of a supernatural, I think they would like this movie also.
But they have to give it a chance.
You have to give it a chance. It is a slow burn, yeah.
Yeah.
So
I would highly recommend it too. I definitely want to. I like the idea of rewatching it, especially after reading. After this review, I'll probably be reading a lot of reviews on it, or spoilers, or what people think are the theories, because I have my own, but I definitely don't like reading before I do a podcast on it. I love it. I think the Kristen Stewart, whatever name she's got in this country, should be enough reason to watch it, because even if you're not into the Twilights or whatever, you have definitely seen her in other South American mirror movies where she is killing it in many ways, and her branching out like this, I think, is reason enough for not the layman's of America or anything, but like anyone not above that either, because it's kind of saying that they're stupid, but like anyone who's more interested in film should seek it out. So I think that's all you need, is that if you love great performances and forget the supernatural stuff, because it's her acting that draws it. If anything, this movie, you know, it's hard to focus, right? But you kind of alluded to, this movie's kind of hard to pay attention to if you're not into that kind of thing. This movie kind of forces you to look at everything because of the nature of the shit around her, you know?
Right, yeah.
Kind of forces you to really stare at the screen, which is why I caught so many as I did, and I'm sure I miss others. So
right, well, because the movie, you're scrambling to look for the thing, right? To look for something, right?
Right, right. The face.
But at the same time, the camera plays a trick on you where it wants you to focus on something specific. There's something in the background, something shiny enough or something whatever enough.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The movie leads you.
Yeah, the movie does lead you.
Yeah.
But not sometimes in the direction it should be.
Oh, maybe.
In a background.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's it for our spoiler-free review. We get into spoilers starting now.
Damn.
What are you waiting for?
My brother died here. My twin brother died in Paris.
An accident?
No. No, heart attack. I actually have the same malformation.
Does it scare you?
No. I didn't scare him.
And you're staying here to mourn?
No, I'm waiting. I told you I was waiting.
What are you waiting for?
So we made this oath. I whoever died first would send the other a sign.
A sign? From the afterlife?
You could call it that. You could call it a million things.
But how do you know if it's a sign?
I'm a medium. He was a medium. I'll just know it.
Damn, she dead. No,
she probably is, dude. I kind of agree that she's kind of dead. What do you think? Is that you?
I do think she's dead.
Okay.
I just don't know when she died.
No, you had a good theory. I think you mentioned offhand in our previously pre-talk.
Yeah.
Where she died instead of the actress.
Yeah.
Or whatever she was. I don't even know what she was.
She was a model.
Model, right? I think.
Yeah.
She died in her clothes after wearing it and then being convinced to go. Was she at the hotel or was she at her at the actress's place? She slept there at the actress's
place. She fell asleep at the actress's place. Right. She masturbated, that's what
she
explained,
right? She explained that
she
to
masturbated.
Her. Yeah, that's right. Because
then she fell asleep.
That was a very great scene. It was not just it was both.
She was like trying to get in her headspace, right?
She was very thrillery, but also very sexy and very sensual.
Yeah.
Which I never, because I mean, I'm just, I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But I'm not. I've never found her attractive, particularly, and I never find actresses. I mean, if you like that kind of thing, go watch porn. But that's not the point. The point sure. is that I never found her that attractive. She's not doesn't breed sensuality right. to me. But she did in that scene. She really sold that because she was doing something forbidden, as yeah. the guy in text or ghost in the text
yeah.
that was texting her was telling, convinced her to do, and she allowed herself to do it. And she was like naughty, but also it was forbidden bad, like because you don't know if she's being roped into something, and she could have died. But also, and then when she started playing with herself, you know, like it was a really good scene. But you think that's your best?
Yeah, there's something guess. About that scene.
Because when it jumps to her awakening, it's a strange jump.
It's a strange jump. It does this weird thing where it feels hazy. You can tell, obviously, time has changed. Time has passed. It's dark out, right, or whatever now. But it feels like this weird, ominous dark. It doesn't have like this... It has this like heavier feeling to it. The camera, the way it looks, also just
yeah. It's like they lowered the or raised the f-stop. Sorry, I'm
whatever that means.
Forgetting, yeah.
Yeah, and something about that, and she wakes up like completely appalled that she was fell asleep, and what's it called, like startled asleep or startled awake, should I say? Almost as if like something had hit her or something.
Do you remember, here's another, I'm connecting this. There's another scene. I think this is when she's at her brother's ex's place. And that person, that woman, who they had, I guess, a relationship with before, obviously, because she was married to her brother. She had already hooked up with that brother's best friend, remember? And he was like, feeling ashamed about it. And she tells him, he was like, because he was telling her, confessing to her, like, I feel like he's looking at me. And like, he's not around. That's just your shame talking.
No, she said, he says...
Guilt or something. He says guilt. She says guilt to me.
Yeah, I don't know. The how the line goes, basically, it's... he says that... She says, I feel him right here.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't know if I feel him. She says, I don't know if I can sense him, right?
Yeah.
And she says, I feel him right here. And she's like... That just sounds like you're feeling guilty for, you know, for...
Yeah, but she tells him that.
She tells him okay. that, yeah, right. exactly.
Okay.
And then we see him walking in the background.
Right. Did right. we see him walking?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
And then the glass.
Well, you see
after
him...
After he leaves. After the guy leaves.
Yeah, after the guy leaves. After the guy leaves, yeah. After the human, yeah, the human guy. you see somebody walking in the background, supposedly Lewis, her brother.
Yeah.
Like the first two windows, you see him, and then after that, it's just a walking glass.
Okay, which makes you guess. Okay. So here's the thing. Here's a very important thing, and this could be nothing. It could be way off. Obviously, this whole movie is kind of open to interpretation, which are some of my favorite movies.
Sure.
After the glass breaks, which I saw coming. I don't know if you saw coming. Did you see it move and shit and fall?
Yeah.
Anyway, I saw it.
It breaks,
and she's about to clean it, and there's this shift of the scene where. The camera is like a cut, but it's a cut that's not necessary. It's a cut on her while she's about to clean it or notices the mess, I should say, maybe like between that, the walking over and the cleaning. And it cuts, but the cut is not the same angle. It shifts a little bit to the left, similar to the shot of her going to sleep in her boss's room and her boss's clothes.
I didn't notice that.
It wakes up and it's cut is a little to the left. It's a darker scene, that scene. It goes darker. This one, it doesn't change color or doesn't change in temperature.
I didn't notice
tone.
It.
I noticed it then. Sure. And maybe there were others, so maybe I missed some.
Yeah.
But so it makes me open to this theory, because there's one thing about this movie that it's going to be kind of crazy. You have to bear with me a little bit. But I think there's evidence in the movie that says that. That's a parallel lives thing. Like, every time we see that, it's her continuing the life when she should have died. Or could have died.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, in another...
Sure.
In another reality, she died in that bed. In another one, she died for whatever. Probably if she was in that kitchen instead of when it dropped.
Yeah.
Right? Or something killed her. Right? Probably her brother. Or maybe not her brother.
Yeah.
Because the other theory I had is very... Because I have this, you know, I do the other show,
sure.
Supernatural Occurrence right. Studies, and they talk about this shit all the time.
Yeah,
there's great theories out there, and I have this really strong belief on, and I think Olivia Sayas too, because the way he says things in the movie, anyway, it sounds really legit to me, is that we reflect our energies. For example, like the reason funeral homes.
Well, they bring that up in the movie also.
They do.
Yeah. That's a very strong scene.
That's the example.
Because he says that she feels something in the house where the model lives.
Yeah.
Right, and then in that same room, actually.
Yeah.
That happens where the bloody murder happens.
And that was strange. That was.
But she said that it would go away soon. Because she's like, I felt more like it just could be because the model is like in the middle of the divorce or some crazy shit like that or some lawsuit or something, and maybe she's angry and brought something with her, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it feels like, and it's going to go away soon because it'll fix itself.
So I think her like, I think at the end, the very strange ending for a lot of people that, you know, who kind of, people probably hate the ending. When she's the knocking.
Yeah.
I think she taught that herself. And because from watching those videos. And she wasn't communing with another spirit. She was communing with herself. Like, she was communing with the energy she was reflecting on, off thinking that she really wanted this response from her brother. Like, I don't think, like... The way the ghost or whatever, the energy that she was manifesting or forcing to respond to her was like her own guiltiness, the fact that she was unsatisfied by not getting a response from her brother. When I like to think, and I don't know where this is a harder pinpoint thing for me, where did the brother respond, if he did? And that's even assuming if you believe in any of this shit.
Right.
Which you could come off wave with it saying, like, they're all crazy.
Yeah.
Or sure. She is, right? So it's hard, but I believe in it. And I don't have to believe in it because the movie does, I think.
Well, where do you think?
I think she was manifesting the energies of what she is thinking her brother would be doing in that scene at the end.
Okay.
And she was responding to herself. And I think it's possible that she achieved a higher sense of purpose after that. Or she died already. There's another like. There's a weird thing between her traveling there that she could have died, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of thinking she didn't, and then she died probably soon after, or maybe she was about to get
one of her parallel.
She was about to get the attack of the heart thing, the heart murmur thing that her brother had.
Oh, we don't know. She died in the middle of that.
Right.
Oh, it's interesting. I couldn't think of that. Okay.
I was thinking of all these things.
So, where do you think the brother died?
When do I think?
Well, when do you think the brother communicated with her? Sorry.
Oh, well, that's a harder thing to pinpoint. Harder than when she died because it's because, my first thought was the first text. That was my first thought because she was so adamant and so like, come on, give me something. I need to get the fuck out of Paris, essentially, she's saying. And she doesn't want to be there anymore, but she made a pact and it's important. And she's a medium. He's a medium. And it's important. And I think that she might have, at that point, manifested her own version of all this shit. And not the text, obviously, because I think the text was Ingo.
Right, which is a weird thing.
Weird thing. It's like they put a murder mystery instead of a supernatural
thing. Right. But it also kind of worked out because she confides in him about herself.
Yeah. And I think he takes advantage of that information.
Advantage of the situation. Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Which I think is pretty cool.
It's great because that scene works. It's so hard to write.
And exposition. She knows she hates her also.
Yeah. Because
she even says, like, I fucking hate her. Like,
no, she's like, you hate her too, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
Like, you fuck this guy, right?
Yeah.
I love that scene because it works as exposition, which is really hard to write. And it makes sense in a movie. It's exposition to a lot of her, like, goals and what she wants to do in her life and her motivations. But it's what moves the story forward also because he becomes a big figure in the movie, even though he's in two scenes.
Yeah. Literally two seasons.
Which is interesting, but you recognize him immediately when he's out of the elevator.
Right, exactly. Yeah. If you want to consider him the phone, he's in almost every scene.
Yeah, right. Exactly. His presence is always there.
His presence is always
there. And she is. So I think that So there was a certain point when she was trying to force his brother, her brother, sorry, to come out and tell him something, and then the texting happened. I think from that point on,
so you
it's
don't
never
think
the
it,
brother.
You don't
I think
you don't
the first time she got in the house was her brother. That was the first. That was
the very home. First time in the house?
Yeah. Well, probably the second time, probably.
Oh, when the drawings
the manifestation
are
happened, right? That was when
no, the first time it happened. It was a weird
yeah,
small
like a
manifestations.
Misty, yeah.
It was a small manifestation, and I just felt like she was... Maybe just wasn't attuned that moment.
Yeah.
But the second time,
maybe both
the second
times.
Time she's in the house,
yeah.
When like the table gets scratched up or whatever,
yeah.
And her drawings get cut or whatever,
right.
That would feel like that's your answer.
Yeah.
Like because it's a big ass thud.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that was it. That
I
was
think
it.
That was it. Right.
She just didn't believe it.
Yeah. Just.
Like, and the rest of the movie, it's like her. It's like a gigantic weird downfall.
You're right.
Like well, how do you explain
not,
the jewelry?
It's her not trusting herself.
Yeah. How do you explain the jewelry?
I don't know.
Because I saw her take the bags.
Yeah.
And that would be weird to lie about that. And she found the bags later. Like, I was like, oh, wait, the bags are here. Like, maybe someone planted them. Like, she was thinking that. Yeah. Like, at least that's how the movie looked like. And then she went to her, wherever she keeps her bags in her own place, and she found the bags and full of jewelry. That she told the cops she left the bags there.
Yeah.
And he was like, obviously, they're not there. Are you sure you left them? Well, she doesn't say it like that.
Well, no, they don't even bring up. She's like, there was jewelry there? Like,
well, yeah. Well, that's the point.
It was more like that, yeah.
Yeah, so what happened? That's a weird one. That's like a Raising Arizona mystery.
Well, in theory,
like,
that's,
how do they have the same tattoo? I don't
know. Right, well, in theory, the whole thing was that he planted the stuff on her to give it to her later, right? Or something like that, or...
Yeah, or after the fact to blame her for the murder.
Blame her for the murder,
that's what
yeah.
I was thinking. My first thought was that, too.
That's what I was
and
thinking.
And probably was her thought, too, but it never went anywhere. As far as I can tell.
Well, it went to... They meet up at the hotel because he gets a
message. Was it because of that? Or was it...
Because she... Right after that, he goes, did you tell the cops about me? Right? Like about the text. She starts getting the text.
Doesn't she have that discussion with her sort of boyfriend before that? Before the jewelry finding? In Greece or wherever he's at? He's not in Greece, but he's in somewhere.
No. She has it... She gets a text first, right?
Mm-hmm.
About did you tell the cops about me? And then she's like, ugh, and he ignores it. Then she has a conversation with the boyfriend because she's already at home,
right?
And then she turns her phone back on. She had it on airplane.
Oh my god, the scariest part.
Yeah,
that was the scariest part because it kept updating. However long the conversation was,
sure. Which a phone would never do that, but yeah,
it would do it all at once.
Yeah.
You mean? Yeah, yeah. Well, it's scary this way, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
course.
It was awesome. I forgot that.
Actually, would it do that way?
It might kind of work that way, I think it'll be off by a few seconds, but it'll probably come up a little faster.
Yeah.
But that's the order. And it was so scary. Like, I'm coming up. I'm in the lobby. I'm like, fuck, get out of there. Like, that was my head. I was so into the movie at that point.
Right.
And
But
and,
I think she's still trying to figure out, is this her brother?
No, some, I think, I mean.
Yeah. Some part of her, I think, wants it to think it's her brother still.
Is that where you think she goes? Back to the hotel?
No, I don't know why she goes back. But the brother was with her the whole time, right? It felt
so,
like it.
That is another question. What is the camera following when it's following nothing?
What was that? That
because
one scene?
She leaves first.
Yeah.
Then there's the nothing, and then it's Ingo, and he shoots the cop or the drug. I don't know what that was. The fence, maybe. I have no idea.
Sure.
So that's the order. What does it mean? Like, a lot of people think that she died, and then her spirit was coming, like following her after. Like her body that she thinks is out there or
yeah.
whatever, her projection of herself.
It's
that theory.
It's a weird thing. Like,
yeah, it's weird. Yeah. It's weird. Like, is it the brother or is it the dead diva?
Right, we don't know.
Right?
Yeah.
A lot of interesting questions about that, and I was curious if you had an answer for yourself.
I didn't have an answer, no. I thought it was the brother.
Yeah, me too.
Who was just following her afterwards.
Mm-hmm. But very strange how he's... tied to the physical world more than that. I don't know how it works. I would say obviously we don't know how it works. Like there's a one character that says we don't. Oh yeah, his shitty boyfriend. He's like saying like none of us know. It's a mystery.
Expose dump guy.
Yeah. I hate him because they're like just so 2%. Like dude, support your girlfriend. Who cares what she believes in?
Right. Exactly.
Anyway, or you want to be your girlfriend. So a very interesting scene. Anything else you want to say or talk about?
I don't know what else to talk about, really. I mean, I don't know. It's weird what else you can talk about with this movie.
The other theory, the big one I was going to say that I kind of alluded to at the beginning of the show is that I think that the camera is very important because I think the camera is her brother. A lot of the times. Like the way it glides. The way it's following her. The way it's kind of making love to her. And you know what's more important? When she's playing with herself, the camera shies away. But the camera doesn't shy away when she's getting naked at the doctor's or when she's changing, but it does shy away when she's playing with herself.
Oh, that's interesting.
Remember, it goes off the corner.
It does go off the corner.
Yeah, after like a moment. After we see a moment after starting, and then it shies away.
Yeah.
And then it comes back later when she's asleep.
That's interesting. Interesting. There's just one scene. This is the weird expose thing where the new boyfriend of the girl, right, of her brother's ex-girlfriend, when they're talking and you see supposedly the brother later after he leaves, there's this weird camera, like the camera feels like it wants to pan in and zoom in the whole time, but it doesn't. It's actually, you can tell someone's holding the camera because the camera still shakes a little bit and it's like moving a little bit like this. Very, very minutiae, very small details.
Yeah, very small.
But you notice the camera moving because it's supposed to be a still shot on like a tripod or something, right? And it's supposed to be like, that's a perfect shot. It's just one camera here, one camera there, right? We're just moving it back and forth. But it doesn't feel, it's somebody actually holding it, and it feels like it's moving a little bit or zooming in a little bit, but there's no zoom in, and you're expecting this crazy zoom in for this guy to tell you, like, in reality, I am your brother or something stupid, right? But you never get it, and it's just this weird thing. But in reality, you should be paying attention to the background because there's something there.
That's good. I didn't notice that.
That's a weird thing, man.
That's good. I mean, I think this movie's fascinating, and it's, if not fun to talk about here, I think people would find a lot of enjoyment talking about it. Like, nothing's 100%, and it is ambiguous. It kind of leads the audience to figure it out for themselves, whatever version they want. And I think those movies are kind of strong sometimes. They're really strong when they do it. Enemy was like that for us, a movie I keep referencing a lot. Enemy's a big one like that, and there's others like that, too. There's a recent movie, too, that I'm trying to think, that has an ending that's ambiguous when it could have been deadpan or easier, but the left it ambiguous on purpose. I'm trying to think of the movie. It's gone. Doesn't matter. Point is that they exist, and I think they make better discussions. So unless you have anything else, I think we'll call it.
No, I can't think of anything else, man.
But I think we both like it, right? We both find it fascinating or intriguing.
Fascinating and intriguing for sure. I want to say I like it right now, but I'm literally fresh off this movie. Just fresh. Talking about it makes me like the movie more, give me more of a reason to like it. But like I said, like, give me a week, and I'll tell you if I still like it.
Right. Yeah, we did just see it today. In the last 12 hours.
Yeah.
So that's it for our personal shopper. We're going to...
Take a break.
That's right. So, lost it.
We're fucking tired, okay?
We're tired, yeah. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll review a monkey ape movie, called War for the Planet of the Apes. Stay with us.
We are not savages. Apes fight only to survive.
Bad human kill ape. All dead now, a long time. Long time.
Bad humans.
Soldier.
Years from now, your children will ask you, what did you do in the greatest war? And you can tell them, I fought to protect this world. And the world's forgotten boy. We created this. But now, we will bring an end to their kind.
After the apes suffer unimaginable losses, Caesar wrestles with his darker instincts and begins his own mythic quest to avenge his kind. This is War for the Planet of the Mofo Apes. With returning director Matt Reeves, who did the last movie and did movies like Cloverfield and Let Me In. Written by him as well as Mark Bombeck. It stars Andy Serkis, of course, Woody Harrelson, Steve Zahn, Karen Cannavale, maybe. Amaya Miller is in this, and the rest I don't really know very well. Oh, Toby Kebbell does return for a bit here in this movie, and I like mentioning him because he did amazing performance in the last movie. So this is the third and not, I don't want to say final, because they could definitely make more movies, and that's not a spoiler to say. If you know your history, son, you know, these are all prequels to movies that were made in the 60s and 50s or something. Yeah. 60s, right? 60s.
Sure.
Yeah, I think the Charlton Heston one came out in the 60s. So they're prequels to those times, and they made like 5 or 6 of those fuckers. So
I thought they only made like 2.
No, they made over 4 for sure. Because I've seen that many titles. I didn't read them all because I didn't want to spoil myself either because I want to see them. And I hear that some of them are really good. Some of them are predictably not okay. Anyway, but that being said, it's, like, it's not spoiler to say that they'll probably be remaking those or doing more prequels to get to those points that made those movies famous, whatever the fuck they're doing. So anyway, but this is a trilogy though, for sure. It's, you know, it's a hell of a movie. I'm not going to lie. As my very first impression coming out of the theater, thinking about it now, a few days later, I think I totally love what this movie was trying to say to me. And I think it succeeded in everything it wanted to say, except for maybe 1 or 2 points. But definitely the overall, all the plots and the character of Caesar was even more fully fledged out and paid attention to and treated with respect in good and light ways, in good and dark. I mean, yeah, I totally dug this movie. What did you think?
Well, I'd have to agree. I mean, it's a really, really cool story, really cool a storyline specifically for Caesar. And it's a lot of things all built in one. There's a lot of things going on in this movie. Overall, it's a revenge movie, I would say so, or for Caesar. But it's interesting to see
his version of South Korean revenge tale.
Sure, it's interesting to see him though go through the struggles that any human would go through nowadays, of losing family, mm-hmm. of wanting revenge, of going through, you know, fighting through your morals and values and PTSD and a lot of things like that.
And believe it or not, this is not the spoilers. All this happens in the first 20 minutes.
Or at least it's brought up.
It opens with an attack.
Sure, exactly.
By the Americans, and then like basically a scene after or two, Woody Harrelson fucking comes down in a military line or whatever with his troops, like all, you know, night vision style, and kill his oldest son. And his wife, Caesar's wife, of course, and thinking that it was him, I guess, at the time, because he said, like, oh, remember he said on the radio, like, we got the main guy.
They got King Kong, I think.
Yeah, King Kong. That's good. And then the revenge, the plot starts after that. And you think that, it's funny, because the film does open up with an action sequence, and it does seem like it would be more, like,
action movie.
Yeah. Like, you think...
You think you're going to see constant battles and stuff.
Right. Well, the title also alludes to that.
It does allude.
I heard this thing, and let me know what you think. And this is, I think it was a good enough idea where I'm repeating it here, which I don't like usually repeating other people's ideas on the show for obvious reasons. I like to come up with my own opinions, which is why you're listening to us out there. But I like this idea that the titles for all these three movies are all fucked up. None of the titles fit the movies. Like, the first one should have been called Dawn for the Planet of the Apes instead of Rise.
Yeah.
And the second one should have been called War for the Planet of the Apes, because not only because is there more battling involved, but it's actually pitting more humans v. apes.
Yeah.
In a very broad way, while exploring, you know, the possibility of humans being able to live with them. But that never actually gets anywhere. Yeah. And then the third one should be called Rise, because they destroy their oppressors and they rise above that.
Yeah.
And like that's a good. That works better.
So just mix up the titles.
Yeah. Just Rise, War, and Dawn, right?
I guess. But okay. So which was the first one?
The first one was actually called Rise.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Right. So it makes sense to me. I don't hate that one. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is Dawn.
Right.
Right. And this is you can look at it,
which kind of synonymous with Rise.
It is kind of it, but you look at it and it's like after the Rise, the next Dawn. You look at it, right, and this is the aftermath of that.
Clearly,
right?
That's what they were thinking.
Sure, right. And I think War, although I get what you're saying, is that it's War of for the Planet of the Apes, right?
Right.
For the Planet of the War of the Apes. The war is just not the war we expected.
I mean, true.
Yeah.
It's not, yeah,
and that's
right.
Spoilers, so we don't want to get into it.
Right. But it's safe to say that there is more action in the last film than this one.
I do agree there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that tank sequence was so cool in the last movie.
Yeah, right. I do
like,
agree.
Like, I remember the shot. It's such a cool revolving 360 shot that they did that I really liked. Like, the stellar shot of that movie, you know? I realized as the apes are approaching and are taking over the compound. That was really cool in the last film. But in this one, it's just, I mean, not to say that there isn't action. The stakes are definitely higher. They're insane. I mean, you know, that's still a thing, of course. That's never not a thing. But it just goes in a different direction. And like you said before, it kicks out revenge storyline. And in a way, it also starts off a journey kind of story, like a road trip, you know, on horseback instead of, you know,
on horseback
and wheels.
Right.
So it does those things. So the movie zags when you think it might zig, based on the title and based on the opening. But I think it's way better because it's more introspective. It's more human. We see his PTSD. I don't think we'd be able to have those moments at all if there was constant battling.
I honestly feel like
how we're going to thwart the humans.
Right, I honestly feel though, like and I'm not saying the movies never in general weren't about Caesar. Overall, Caesar is like the main thing in the movies.
Yeah, right? All three are him.
All three are him, right? And it kind of feels very, very Jesus-like also, story-wise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
So to see Caesar, just like his emotions and his reactions are, I mean, you rely a lot on that. And then you rely a lot on that and also on the emotions and reactions from all the rest of the apes as well, right? Which is interesting because the movie does a really great job of kind of making us care for the apes and give two shits about the humans.
Especially in this one.
Yeah.
Because well, it's funny because they've kind of like been conditioning their audience, these apes movies,
sure,
with getting us used to that fact. Because the first movie, it was the most humans. It was just one Caesar.
Yeah.
Except for in Two Other Monkeys, I think it was his consigliere and Toby Kebbell's character. And then in the second one, a lot more monkeys for sure.
Yeah.
Or apes, I mean. But there were definitely humans that were good too, and they were a part of the story.
Right, exactly.
They had their own scenes.
And I do think that in the second one, it does show you a bit more of the humanity side, the good side of humanity.
You see the leader trying to work things out.
Right, exactly. These apes. Like, hey, listen, we're trying to coexist. Right.
This one, it's 80% to 90%.
Right, apes. Yeah, it really is.
And the reason humans are there is because they happen to be in the way.
The apes. Right, exactly.
Right, it's not right. Even. So, anything else you want to say without spoilers before we go on to spoiler stuff?
No. Like, the movie changes genres in between. Like I said, overall, it's a revenge movie. That's the way I see it. Mm-hmm. I guess on a quest, right?
It's a revenge movie that turns into a... I'm not going to say the obvious one, but it turns into a... Well, the reason why I wanted Rise of the Planet of the Apes in there so badly.
Right, yeah, I get it.
That's my little clever note. I don't know. Clue.
Sure.
Fuck, that's a word. Clue. The word of the clue. Anyway.
Clever note.
Like, what the fuck am I saying?
Jesus. Sure.
But I want to say before we do go on, if you haven't seen it and don't want to get spoiled, which I don't think you should watch it. It's the emotional impact of his family's death made me audibly gasp in the movie theater. And then realizing, because I was too stupid at the time to really think that, oh, yeah, of course he would kill the wife, too. And then I saw her dead body with Caesar after he noticed. I'm like, dude, I fell for that guy so hard. And you understand his pain. But you also don't want him to make a mistake because the odds are so against him.
Right.
Anyway, so let's move on to spoilers for War for the Planet of the Apes starting now.
I see, girl. I think you human. Oh, but you ape like me. No, put down.
How long have you been here?
Long time. Home.
Are there more like you? More apes from zoo?
Dead. All dead. Long time. Human get sick. Ape get smart. Then human kill ape. But not me. I rot.
You learn to speak.
Listen, human. Bad ape.
Yeah, that spoiled everything.
Yes, everything. So it ends with credits, as always. Sorry, guys. No, so it becomes a prison escape movie.
Right.
It becomes a Nazi-esque get out of the concentration camp.
Did you feel it hokey that well, there's an interesting transition because they find the little girl, right, who has the disease. What do they call it?
Well, it's the simian flu, but it's like a version of that, like a mutated version of that, where it doesn't kill you right away. I suppose it just shuts down your motor skills or something.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
Makes you dumb, or
from my understanding, right? I think if you're a kid, though, you can live through it or something, or maybe
it's very flimsy.
Yeah, it was
for sure.
So, but it feels like they get this pet. Right, this pet evolves into like, oh, she's an actual like an actual thing, right?
Cool reversal, by the way, having a human pet.
Exactly. Well, did you feel it hokey that it was like because the opposite is
no, that wasn't hokey. The hokey was that there was really no explanation to. I mean, they didn't need it, but the fact that she's there and the way it was described for other people that got it is that they had to be killed, or they would have been killed, or they would have been worse off. Like, I really wanted to know. Where is that line? And I
well, it's
never
interesting
saw
that
it.
You kind of don't need it to get it, also because there's nobody to research it.
So. Right, and I know the movie. I'd rather have the movie focus on what it was focusing on.
Yeah.
But like, I'm like, why even introduce it? Yeah. But I think they were. This is part of making a movie of franchises. Is because, and I found this out later because I haven't seen the original movie in over 15 years. Easy, and I just don't remember anything, but. The main, apparently one of the main characters in there or something like that, her name is Nova, and that's why I felt like they were forced to shoehorn in the something child like version of Nova in there and give it a reason that goes with this more realistic setting of the simian flu and as to why the humans died. I think that that's probably why it makes the least sense for us, is because they thought that, or maybe they were pressured to, I don't know what, to do that.
Okay.
You know, and as far as, you know, shoehorning in shit that we don't like, you know, check your Iron Man 2 people. This does it way better than any of those movies. So,
yeah, well, that Nova scene where she shows, like, no, you are Nova, because she asks, what am I? Right. If you're a monk, am I ape? Right? Because she asks herself, that's a heartfelt moment.
Right.
Because she also asked the right person, because if she asked Caesar at that moment, she would have been like, you're not ape, you're a fucking dumb human. And because he was kind of angry. Right? But if you asked the right person,
Maurice,
exactly.
Yeah, I love Maurice.
Yeah. Maurice is like, I'm not going to tell you you're not, because you basically kind of like, you're good, right? But you also don't want to tell them something bad. Like, but you're unique and you're this person. Like, you are this.
Maurice is the character I want to befriend so bad. Like, I would never want to befriend Caesar because I would admire him from afar. But I would love to befriend Maurice. He seems like a cool cat to talk with. Like, if there were humans or there was alcohol around, I want to have drinks with him.
Oh, okay. You know? That's cool.
He just seems so cool. And, you know, I'm very... Just wise, I guess. You know,
it's just,
I haven't seen the original. I've only seen the first, not the original, the James Franco first movie of this trilogy. Once at the one time it came out, so I don't remember much of it.
I think I saw it.
He was in there. I'm pretty sure. Once, I remember him being in the cages that led to the escape at the end. But I don't remember his involvement. I don't remember if I loved him right away or not.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, he is one of the original gang, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah, him and Koba and Caesar were the top three original OG. there were so Caesar is Dr. Dre, Maurice is Ice Cube, and then EZ of course died, so that's Kobe, Koba.
That's right? Fucked up, yeah.
Yep, sorry. Anyway, what else do you want to say or talk about in this room? I'll bring something up, I guess. Was it successful for you as a revenge plot? Because it is. Like to some people, I can see you or somebody else or even me, watching his lack of retribution, or the fact that it came out so late and then the way that it did.
Yeah,
the all these things that happened that didn't happen the way we wanted it to at the time. Like, I can see people being let down by that. Were you let down? Like with that?
No, because you're kinda, fighting your own demons.
It takes away the revenge.
No, because he's fighting his own demons the whole movie. Right. And the demons is the struggle of him wanting to stick to what he knows is true. And if you're good in the world, like, good pays you out, right? And like, because he's taught morals from whenever, right? Like, morals and values. Like, hey, like he, that's why he lets those soldiers live. Like, the message is, I'm not here to kill you guys. Like, I'm here to let you know, leave us the fuck alone. Right? We want to, you coexist, we'll coexist. Don't bother us, we won't bother you. Right? Kind of scenario. And when he's been pushed many times, I mean, two movies, right? Being pushed that other way, like, no, like, fight us, do something, react, right? And he's done it many times. And when it comes to the fact that his family gets killed in the process, right, it is a normal reaction to want to, you know, break everything you have instilled for, all your pillars that are holding you up, right?
Yeah.
It makes sense. And it makes sense that had he gotten his revenge early, he would have done it. No doubt about it. Because he wouldn't have had the struggle of fighting through it. Going in, and the longer it takes, you start thinking more about it. You start forgiving more, I guess, also. And things of that nature, right? And learning, I guess, just in general, learning to let go a little bit more.
Yeah.
And kind of come back to what you normally are. So coming to all the way to the end, and especially what happens to Woody Harrelson's character, which I already forget his name.
The Colonel.
Yeah, so when he gets which is a spoiler, he interacts infected. With the simian flu. He gets infected.
Cool way with the doll.
Yeah, cool with the doll, exactly. Which is he asks to get killed. The gun's right there. He's asking to get killed, and he doesn't want to do it because he knows, like, that's going to break everything, that he's going to go down a hole that he doesn't want to go down, you know? He doesn't want to follow Alice through that rabbit hole because that's not his rabbit hole to go down to.
Oh, that's funny. Because I asked you before, and I thought you were coming from a different angle, but now I know different. I asked you before the show that yesterday when I told him I asked you if Caesar found him not infected, would he have shot him?
Oh, and I said yes,
and you said he would have.
Yeah,
I thought you meant because like the fact that he was so weak and infected and. I thought that he wasn't going to do it just to make him suffer more.
Ha! You know what? I thought about that, and the way I see it now is more like, I think he would have shot him, but he didn't think he would have killed him. He would have left him like injured or something, just for the fact that like, I honestly think he found himself more.
No, I think he found a loophole in his revenge.
Oh, or he's going to die regardless, and like.
Right. I think if he's like, okay, I'll give him a helping hand so he can shoot himself, but. His blood is not on my hands anymore.
Yeah.
You know, not one more body.
You think because he was going to die regardless?
Right. Like, or he wanted to die regardless. And he just needed a push for the colonel to pull his own trigger rather than having Caesar do it for him. It felt like more like that than maybe satisfying his need to kill him, because at that point, might as well be dead. I don't know. I guess I saw Caesar being a little more vindictive than you did. But that's cool. I can see. I mean, it's open to that for sure. There's some through his kid crying for him.
Yeah.
And the fucking Jesus. Over and over, like stop showing me this.
Right.
It hurt, and it separated them. Those fucking assholes.
Yeah.
What did you think of the mechanics of that Maurice and the other guy, I forgot his name, the other enforcer guy and the girl and Bad Ape. What do you think of that sort of side plot of them?
Where they stumble upon this other ape who knows how to talk.
The zoo ape,
right. Who knows how to talk a lot more like Caesar in comparison to the rest, where everybody just kind of sign languages.
Right.
I found that it was a comic relief. It was more of a comedian.
Oh, he was great comic relief.
Right. I think it loosened up a lot of tension that was going around. Because a lot of the thing is you're just seeing Caesar extremely angry and everybody just tiptoeing around him.
Yeah.
And then he comes in and he's like, how are you here? And this and that. And, you know, he brings in a lot of questions that I think the audience is asking at that point also that gets answered.
Well, he always opens up to a new world even, because it's suggesting that... Not just these apes who have been specifically affected with Caesar's stuff from way back in the first movie that are intelligent, but that they, now because the flu is everywhere and has also mutated into God knows what.
That means the rest of the apes.
That means that most likely there's probably a lot more apes, maybe all the remaining apes that are either in the wild or in zoos, that they're also intelligent.
Right.
And they have their own ideals or their own, and they have their own upbringing. It's different from Caesar, because Caesar, you know, you've always seen Caesar's town, right? Yeah. Or people, as the one of a kind. Like, if you kill them, they're all extinct. I've always felt that way. They've always felt, the movies have always,
the movies have always felt,
even in this movie, you still feel it, but even with this, but this information does open up that kind of possibility.
Right.
Right. I thought that was cool. And it's very subtle, too, because, I mean, they do talk about it, but it's subtle in the way that they don't tend to, they don't over-exaggerate on any point. Like, they still worry about them getting out, them finding a safe place away from humans. I mean, that's the main thing.
Right.
They never stay away from that. So I like this ending. I know some people have hated this ending where about the humans, how they get demolished. It is a bit of, like, convenience that Caesar is able to barely scrape alive or scrape enough to, you know, enough to go back, you know, make sure the colonel, having a satisfaction of the colonel dying, not that he killed him, and then being able to take out the humans and in turn create an avalanche that kills the rest of the humans that were killing the other humans. So all this stuff. I mean, cool battle sequence with the helicopters.
That was cool, yeah.
You know, not like bombastic.
I just love how focused the humans were to not pay attention to see apes running away from them. Like, they were just so focused on each other.
Right.
That, like, it was just like, oh, shit, people are, like, running away. Like, one of them notices, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took, like, one person to notice to figure out that something was going on.
Yeah, exactly. And they started shooting. You
know, right.
There's more deaths. So the convenience stuff, did that bother you? Like, some of that stuff that was happening? Like it seemed like the movie was trying to keep Caesar alive.
Caesar alive. No, I mean, it made sense. Everything, like, it was a chain reaction of things. It was all accidental. It's not like everything was planned. Had everything felt like more like the planned way or whatever, it would have been, I would have been like, oh, it's just the director or whatever just trying to keep, you know, Caesar alive, or the storyline is for that.
I think it's like right on the line.
Yeah, I honestly felt like if he died there, they would have been that's okay with it, and they would have just made their way to whatever, and they would have just, you know, lived with the fact that Caesar died early, right? But that Caesar's not dying, because he already done enough for them to, like, tell them, like, you need to, like, have your own strength, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, they were surprisingly still very lost without
him. To remind them, yeah, they were.
They really.
Well, I just think they suffered so many losses, and they were so many times at war that they needed that guidance.
Yeah.
And this being entrapped, right, being in prison, should I say, and then Caesar fighting for them, just for basic rights, you know,
yeah,
for them to have it. And telling them that, yeah, there's somebody willing to stand up for yourself, but you have to stand up for yourself as well. Kind of like explaining them that to them. It's also giving them, like, that little nudge of, like, hey, guys, I can't be here all the time. You need to know that you got to stand up for yourselves.
Right. Yeah, like I said, for me, it was right on the line as far as that goes. And I really loved how, I mean, whatever writing mechanic they had to use to get to an avalanche to destroy the rest of the soldiers, which I think Woody Harrelson's character, the colonel, said, it's, I think he said offhandedly, might be the last remnants of humans.
Yeah, well, at least in that part of the world.
At least as far as he knows, right?
Yeah.
Probably not. Probably the Aborigines in Australia and the Galapagos are like, well, we're just having a normal day still.
Yeah.
Like,
to them, I can't talk to my family over there in New York or whatever, you know?
No, not, like, I mean, like, these old people, these people who are, like, living in a technology-less area.
Oh, yeah. Those guys are probably just like, yeah, they're whatever. Like,
what's going on? Yeah. Am I hunting?
I mean, that, or they just encountered a gorilla or an ape that, like, just starts talking to them.
Pretty smart, but yeah. That'd exactly. be like,
I understand what you're saying.
And they'll probably be like, cool.
Right.
Want some coffee?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, there's no more of you guys. I'm like, I'm right here. Right,
exactly.
But, yeah. Those guys are fine. But this, I like the idea that nature kind of like forces survival of the fittest
on humanity,
because not only did they run in a straight line in a fucking perfect avalanche area, avalanche landing zone, that they can't even climb trees, which is what the apes did, and they got away.
Smart.
Most of them, I think, maybe all of them. And that was really cool and very, you know, very visually, like, pleasing and satisfying.
Yeah, it was.
It's a strange movie. It's also very hard for a movie to take the perspective of non-humans as the hero. That's very hard to do.
It really is.
Because we need to, like, humans in movies, it's like we always need to suck each other's cock all the time. I mean, you just can't stay away from the path, but these movies have done that successfully. Yeah. That's, if anything, that's maybe one of the problems of Valerian, is that it doesn't branch out enough on that kind of thing.
I would agree, yeah. But we'll talk about that in a
spoiler later. For that, I guess. But you've seen one trailer, you know exactly that they're all humans. Well, the main actors are humans. Well, what do you think of the Koba's? It's funny because Koba's influence in the second film still reaches out into Caesar land in this one, in that he gets PTSD dreams from him about him, which is very cool, very dark and fucking scary. But also, more realistic, I guess, is that his followers are working for the military. The ones that wanted, or the cowards that ran away, like what was that guy, Winter?
Yeah,
was his name Winter?
Was it Winter or Snow?
Tundra or something? Or Winter, I think it was called. Yeah, that was, and he kills them. It was like half accident, but half unintentional. Caesar,
yeah, it was half accident.
Trying to stop him from,
yeah, stop from, him from talking. Yeah. From, yeah,
that was. I see his point. I probably would have done the same. Very, you know, but it's just fucked up. What did you think of that? This plot mechanic of these apes, you know, some of them branching out.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that they would go that route. It's a very.
But that happens a lot in wartime. We've seen stories.
What's interesting about it is that it's almost the same thing of the humans going against each other in the same movie. In the movie, they're in the same organization. Like, they're part of the same military. It's just this colonel wanted to wipe off certain things that he wasn't supposed to, right? And their thought is to go against each other, right? And that's basically kind of like the same thing with Koba and this, or these other apes that are alive. They're like, well, we don't agree with those, so we want to fight them for it. And how do we fight? We side with the enemy, and then we'll just work our way in between, you know?
I mean, the more pragmatic of them all, the guy who has a bit of a redemption arc, is that bigger guy, the main gorilla that's they call Kong a lot.
They call Donkey, you know?
Donkey, sorry, Donkey.
Well, they call them all Donkeys, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're right. I think you're right. His has a bit of a redemption arc at the end when he saves Caesar and then gets shot point blank, executed right to the head. And he gets that one little bit when they slow motion of his fellow apes dying around him. And that was very cool, and it was enough for me because the character wasn't super fleshed out. He clearly was like kind of a thug that found his something,
right? Yeah,
but I think it's it reminded me of this movie called you could think of a lot of war movies, but it reminded me of this movie called Rabbit Proof Fence, which I don't know if you've ever seen, and it's an Australian film. Sorry, it's an Australian film about these girls, these Aborigine girls who ran away from the whites detention center or whatever, who were trying to force them to learn their ways and basically be, they want to like mix the races so it could be more white into their genealogy, right? It's fucked up. Anyway, and they hunt them down, right? Australia's huge too, so and they use an aborigine to track them down, you know, and in very much the same fashion as using these gorillas or apes for their own ends against their own people,
right? To carry heavier loads,
for whatever reason they have, but yeah. They know the point is that the whites, in this case, I guess the humans, they don't care why you're there,
right?
Just follow my goddamn orders.
Well, they're like to carry heavier loads, to let them know where they're, where the people are hiding, you know, to figure out. I guess they have an extra sense of things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen many cases where people, you know, use Jews to work for them, clean their houses or whatever,
right?
And you still hate their guts and call them shit, you know.
Right.
You know, I guess not the same thing, but something similar.
Sure.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, it's fucked up. And some of them, you know, relished being able to work so they'd be okay with not dying. Yeah, it sucks. It feels, I guess, as far as the war aspects of the title and what this movie's trying to show, is that that's probably the most, I say, it gives out. Because the concentration camp thing, yeah, they do feel like refugees. Or like prisoners of war, they do feel that way,
right?
And it does become the great ape escape.
yeah, it does.
But it's like, but I feel like that element is the most war-like element of the film. Anything else you want to say on war?
No, I mean it's fun. It's a lot of heart. It's fun to watch. It's a cool journey to see overall. Like, I had fun watching some of the scenes. It's a lot of heartfelt moments also, and it makes you feel just emotions. So it's a crazy emotional ride as well. Mm-hmm. That depends a lot on Caesar. I love the technology how they look fucking great, like all the apes.
Oh Jesus, no. Maybe
everything looks seamless.
I was never thinking I was watching a character. I was always watching a character.
Exactly. That's what it felt like.
Yeah. Jesus, technology.
I just love where the technology is right now. Yeah.
Oh my God, we're gonna all be out of jobs. Actors anyway. One more thing is that at the very ending, I guess we were talking about Caesar's death, and that's why it feels like a trilogy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like a locked in trilogy. It is the reason why Caesar becomes the legend. And I think that, for whatever faults you may have with this movie, because again, I think we said before in an earlier show that these movies keep surprising us and how great they are, because no one expects them to be, and it's still just as amazing. And I think these three films completely show us the most human ruler in cinema, I think, since what, The Godfather, and even him, like. Not really that much, because he doesn't succeed in any way Caesar does. I don't know. Like, it's amazing. I mean, ruler on cinema. I mean, not like in... Actually, maybe longer for actual ruler. I don't know what the last benevolent great ruler is. But it ain't fucking Trump or anything like that right now. So, or any queen that I know. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing. Like, it explains... Like, it gives complete, like, utter reason why the five movies that exist, you know, that comes after that, supposedly in the story, exist, and why there is a Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
It's so good. He laid the groundwork perfect.
Yeah.
Caesar did, yeah, whether he wanted to or not. Makes sense whether statues of him, they idolize him for all time. And it's really cool. Did you think it was a little hokey? I mean, it was perfect anyway, because that the vision was perfect for it, but that he lived long enough just to get there.
I did feel a little bit like it.
He has still the arrow in there? Or not arrow, but the wound? I'm like, oh, I thought that was fine.
I thought they just healed him.
I thought they were taking weeks there.
But you know what? It's like making the journey of out of the desert, and then, you know, like, you just got to the journey. All you wanted to do is live to get to there. And the moment you get there, you just don't have the energy anymore.
Right.
You die. Well, I've heard it's a lot of people. Like, yeah, you know. You went like 7 days without water. You're like, well, you're going to die, dude. Like... Just the willpower left. You got you that far enough, but you couldn't.
Also, very cool how his son, who was obviously a bigger role in the second film, I mean, big enough where, like, I still remembered it. So when he died in the beginning of this movie, I felt for that death.
Yeah.
He had recently come back from finding this place.
Right.
And he said it was out for a while, which is why they were giving him news updates and stuff. And I love how his son, his death caused a lot of the ways to get here, to get to this point and deal with the humans finally, because they had to. Made sense that right before his death, he found this amazing place for them all. It's like his last gift, right?
Right.
It was good. Like, he would have been a great leader, basically.
Exactly.
The makings of it. Oh, man, my throat's the worst today. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our third film here. A crazy, much more expansive film, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. Stay with us.
We get on just great. You flirt. I smile.
Yeah, we're a team.
A dark force threatens Alpha, a vast metropolis and home to species from a thousand planets. Special operatives Valerian and Loreline must race to identify the marauding menace and safeguard not just Alpha, but the future of the universe. I don't know about the last part exactly, but a little bit of that too. All right, so this is Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, based on a comic book, which I have not read or heard of. Have you heard of it or read it?
Negative.
You're more of a comics
fan. I am a beat popsicle.
Ah, nice. A few people got that. Written and directed by Luc Besson, the guy who did The Fifth Element, Professional, La Femme Nikita. He did Lucy. I think did he do that Jet Li movie?
I have no clue.
Okay. Anyway, he's done a bunch. He produced a bunch in the early 2000s where he stopped directing and just kind of like mentored a bunch of people that did lesser films than his, in my opinion. Lesser versions of his films, I guess, or, you know, some were okay. Like Taken, he was part of the Taken crew, but those movies did not get better either. So anyway, and this movie starts Dane DeHaan, Cara Delevingne.
Uh-huh. You try that one, buddy.
Yeah. I've seen it before. I've seen all these actors before. Clive Owen. Rihanna's in this fucking thing. Ethan Hawke's in it. Herbie Hancock.
Ethan.
Chris Wu. Sorry, Sam Spruill. Elaine Chabot. Rutger Hauer is in it for a bit. I guess a lot of these are... Xavier Giannoli. I want to mention him because he's in it for actually more than a few scenes. Louise Leterrier. Because some of the bigger actors are in it for one scene, like Ethan Hawke, because Rutger Hauer is in it for like 30 seconds, for example. So I don't want to... I hate that I had to mention those names first. Anyway, so for Lillian, it's clearly an action-adventure sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Adventure sci-fi being even more prominent than usual, which is nice. You know, it could be... I mean, I guess depending on... I forget what you thought of this movie... I feel like I think the way I'll ask the question, you'll know what I think of that movie, even though I kind of like it. Is Valerian this year's Jupiter Ascending?
Oh, good question.
Because that was a wacky, bonkers, all out kind of a weird movie.
No,
did not do favorably. Nobody really liked it.
Yeah.
I liked the stuff in it.
Yeah. But I agree.
Overall.
No, because I think this one does a better job of explaining more in the world what's going on, even though the universe,
mm-hmm.
Even though it also does a really shitty job of not explaining anything, but just because you want it to. And the movie can't do that. The movie can't explain everything, every single little thing. But I think it has a great intro, for example. Both intros. There's two weird intros that I really like. Which one where it explains the world or how they get to 1,000 cities. And then the one where you see these, what are these alien race, and then you see their
planet,
life.
Planet Newell?
Palette Moo? Moo?
Mool?
Mool. Yeah. M-U-L. Yeah, Mool.
M-U-U. Weird.
Yeah. Weird
Russian U. L.
I was going to say German, but okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's, I like both of those intros. The beginning of the movie right away.
I really love the opening.
Yeah.
Opening with that Bowie song. You know, Ground Control calling from Major Tom.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah. It was really cool. And I think it does a lot better job world building than Jupiter Ascending did. Jupiter Ascending really focused on like one or two things. And a lot of the time we were on Earth. So it felt kind of lame. And in comparison to this, that's explains true. A lot more.
Although there's this great, I still love the scene in Jupiter Ascending. I know we're not talking about that movie, but there's a great scene there's a scene like this that reminded me of that. In this movie, I mean, Valerian. That in Jupiter Ascending, there's a scene where they have to get the paperwork done that she's a princess. And she has to go to all these offices in this vast IRS for galaxy buildings.
Right, exactly.
It was very like, oh my God, all the bureaucracy and red tape. That it, you know, whatever you have to go through now to get a passport is like 3,000 times worse than
right.
In the galaxy. I just thought that was funny, and also probably more right than it would be. So I thought that was cool. So yeah, I really love the opening of this movie, and I'm just gonna state it out here right now. It opens with the first time we go into space, 70s, 60s, and it goes beyond our years. Like some 2020 was the first one that was beyond ours, and then 2030, and then it skipped 100 and
100 years more. 2150, I think it goes to.
And then, and even after that whole intro, they skip another 400 when the movie starts. So it's quite a while. And in that process, we meet aliens for the first time, and we shake hands or try to shake hands with them. And it's always the same montage. It's a montage of similar actions of. Meeting new species, kind of like
I love the real simpleness of how they explain how the anti-gravity device, or the gravity device, should I say, in space, where it's just like all you heard was like, turn on the gravity device, and you see them like spin really fast, that simple thing or whatever, like you're supposed to create momentum or whatever, and it boop, immediately made, you know, gravity for them in this, in space, right, where it's not... existed or whatever, not existed, but what's it called? That you have to make your own of, and it's interesting. And they did it once, and you're like, we never have to explain this ever again. And it's just like those little things,
right? And also, they It must be, this must be a delight for costume designers and fucking animators.
Yeah.
It must be the best day of their lives when they get a project like this, because they're like,
or worse.
Maybe they get told, no, I mean, they have to be, if they, I'm not saying they have to, of course no one has to, but anyone who's doing that for just for the money is doing it for the wrong reason. I don't know why they work that hard to get up there. Yeah. You know, like, you'd have to do it because you want to and want to create shit and they'd never see again. I mean, that's what they're doing in this movie. A lot of this shit you've never seen before in the way they do it. And the movie's very aware of that, that it's that's creative and it's world building. And it is to its detriment that it does all that, because it does do a lot of work in that regard when it should have worked more on the plot, maybe more on the characterization. Even the simple, like, you know, even the main character, Valerian, which I thought was the name of the city, by the way, or the planet or something. Valerian is a very two-dimensional character. He's like a jock, and he's going to learn to not be a jock. It's very simple, and it's kind of two-dimensional. Very easy to see.
They try to give him something towards the end that you're like, really?
Right.
Yeah. Right, and you just didn't see it.
Yeah, it was hard to. And also, we alluded earlier that War of the Planet of the Apes' main power that it manages to pull off somehow is that it makes us go against the humans. And
Right. Yeah, it's interesting.
All these species
are still
humans. Exactly. And their colonel is also human, and their captain is also human. You know, they kind of stick to their own thing, I guess. And it's funny. And it does bring up a lot of questions that will never be answered properly. But it doesn't care. The movie doesn't care. And it's fine that I don't care about it. This movie is meant to be taken as a frolic, fun time. It's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. We don't need the scene of the chilled monkey brains. You know, we don't need any of that shit. But it's fun and it's there. We don't need to have stepping on fortune cookies and
right.
You know, we don't need those scenes. But those scenes made those movies, for me, memorable, and I'm sure for you too, and for many others.
Yeah.
They made that movie an adventure. That's why, you know, nothing gets resolved right away. It takes minutes and minutes of action. So this movie does the same. So don't take it too seriously. But at the same time, there are many plot holes. Nothing makes sense. I really wish the characters were stronger, because even if the plot didn't matter, I would give this thing another star if I just believed these personas a bit more, or if I just confided in them a bit more. Like, sure. I knew they were going to pull it off. I just wish I cared more, instead of watching the background a lot, or instead of wondering what awesome thing they're going to show us that only a mind could create, like Luc Besson's or like the Wachowskis. Yeah. So it really succeeds, but it also fails in some points. So what do you think of without spoiling what the main plot really turns out to be, what do you think of this, the opening of this planet? I know you briefly said something about it, but the opening of this planet and how it eventually involves them and these characters and their mission. What did you think of because, you know, you have this expansive world you're creating. This is the story you decided to choose to tell it the first time. Now, do you think it was a good way to tell, like a good way to show this world for the first time by doing this mission particularly? Or you think there could have been a better way?
I think it's a more easier way to ease you in, I suppose, for the fact that we're showing just the human side of aspect, right? The humans, we've mainly focused on theirs. Mm-hmm. It's the human military, how we still function, even though in this thousand planet ship that...
After all these species, we're still the most violent.
Yeah,
right. Seemingly, if we're the security guard of the city.
Right, what it does feel like, we are the security guard of the city.
Okay, you guys make a lot of weapons, huh? You guys really like to fight. You don't? No, we focus on neurons and money.
Right, exactly.
You know, or harvesting.
Right. Or love.
Or love, or God forbid, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's easier to settle something that you already know, right, I guess, so human-wise, human aspect-wise, than instead of just kind of going balls deep with just aliens. It makes sense, I suppose. It was okay. I don't know. They could have done something different, some stuff differently. Honestly, like I do agree with you with the fact that they needed to flesh out just Valerian more.
I would say Laureline, maybe. Yeah. I don't know how they pronounce her name. More, too. But like, she was clearly second, and I think we had her more. Like, I think her,
I was actually gonna
her
say the
performance
same thing.
Gave more.
Her performance was actually a lot stronger than Valerian's.
Dane DeHaan, and it's funny because Dane DeHaan is not a bad actor. He's a fucking Chronicle dude.
The way I see it,
but also he has been amazing Spider-Man. That was not good.
The way I see it is for what's it called, she was strictly somebody who was just defending herself from Valerian, right? His prowess, playlist. His playlist, yeah. Exactly, right?
She does a lot of girls.
But at the same time, showing that who she is, who she can be for him, there's a lot more going on for her in that end than just this kind of like Valerian's, all they're saying is, you need to grow up. And that's basically the thing about Valerian is that he's childish still.
Yeah, he's
but other than that, I mean,
he's fucking Tom Cruise in Top Gun.
Right. Other than that, there's nothing to him.
He has to get second place first before he learns a lesson.
Right.
Or whatever. I know that's not the point of the movie. Yeah, here's a preparation for you guys. If you guys haven't seen it yet, we're still in spoiler-free area. So the writer's clunky as shit. The writing is so clunky. It's bad. Like, especially for the introduction of Valerian and Laureline. It's like both rushing its way out there, but and yet not taking its time within. Rushing, but also saying too much than we need to at the same time. You know, it's like doing, maybe the chemistry was off also, but I just didn't. It seems like either they have this discussion every day, which must be very infuriating and really unrealistic, or just happens to be now. Like, it just seems weird. Like, how long have they been together? What do we know about these two?
Right.
Other than one wants to fuck the other and has wrong reasons to do it, clearly. I didn't like their interaction at first. I liked their interaction with the computer mainframe more, like when they have to stretch out their arms to put the seatbelt on. Yeah, that was more nuance there than with themselves. And it was until like this rescue attempt, which I won't spoil. This is a rescue attempt that happens in another like forbidden area for humans that they have to break into. Until that point, did I even briefly believe that there was a shot of chemistry?
The way I saw it is just that they were just very. They were very loose with each other, obviously. In the beginning, it does feel off-putting, but it kind of grows on you. It grew on me, at least. And I didn't mind it too much afterwards. He wanted to act more like, we're friends. We're cool, right? And we're friends around each other. Because we have to be around each other. And why let it be something, you know, super fucking lame like the military normally is, right? Very strict, very whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, instead, let's just... You know, whatever. Let's have fun, right? That's the way he sees it. But when he goes to, you know, be professional, he has to be. He goes professional, right? And that's when they suit up, they look nice instead of wearing a Hawaiian T-shirt, for example,
right,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, I do think that he has like a very strange backwards way of seeing what authority is or should be until the end of the movie, of course, where he's like basically forced to pick the right choice over the disciplined choice. Yeah, but other than that, though, the visuals are fantastic.
True.
I think they're really cool. Like, I'm surprised that a studio gave Luc Besson $200 million or whatever it was to make this movie.
Yeah,
and
it's an established IP also. So, or for some people,
I didn't even know. So I thought it was.
Neither did I.
I thought it was original.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much of it came from his head or not. But I know that some of that shit, even the backgrounds, like there was a Corbin diner or cafe.
Yeah, I saw that.
There's shit like that all over. Like it's like the Obi-Wan cafe again. You know, the Indiana Jones reference.
Right.
So it's like that world-building funniness, like only the director could put in.
Could add those little touches, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, that was good. That's really stellar. I wish here's another bad thing. Not, like, terrible. It's just, and I have to compare it to The Fifth Element. You know, we were comparing it earlier in off-air. And I think that one thing that The Fifth Element has, a lot of that movie and this movie are very similar. They have the same stuff, the visionary stuff, the originality, at least how it looks and feels, especially the bizarre, that's amazing, and the interdimensional travel works and travel in general, how they're suited. Like, you don't need much of it explained, which is thank God. It's good stuff. Creatures are amazing. But Fifth Element had better, I don't say better actors because that's putting it too mildly, but they have better acting in The Fifth Element.
Oh, that shook the house.
Yeah, if you can hear thunder, it's looking, it shook the house. It's reaching up here now. Apparently Streamwood got flooded.
Gross. Oh, really?
Yeah, I heard.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, but the acting was way better. Gary Oldman, as crazy as he was and stupid, like 100% evil, that was cartoonish, He acted the shit out of that. Mila Jovovich. I know that she's not any, you know, great actress or anything, but that's her like best performance. She nailed whatever role that she's supposed. Like she nailed the Lilu Dallas. And Bruce Willis played Bruce Willis, so that was fine. But yeah. Like, you know, John, whatever his name. I was trying to think of the name before. I couldn't think of it. The guy who plays Cornelius the priest acted the shit out of that role. I mean, the fact that he got that actor to play in that movie. It's amazing, and I just think none of that's in here. Like I wanted something like that from Clive Owen, maybe.
It's a bop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and Chris Tucker played Chris Tucker, of course. You know, I think that's what's missing also from this movie that would have made it Fifth Element awesome.
Do we need more from these actors? Some of them are known, some of them aren't.
Ian Holm. So wow, I was way off.
Yeah, so some of them are known, some of them are not, right?
Yeah.
Do we need more from those actors? Is that what we needed?
Or maybe there's just too many, like maybe because back then in the 90s when Fifth Element was made, a lot of those were actors in suits, and this is a lot of non that. Like the main actress in the beginning, I mean, not an actress, but that was cool. Her day, the life of this world.
I did love that. Yeah, that was shattered. Cool.
That was sad.
A lot of emotions going on.
Whole short film.
Yeah,
it was really great. But you're right. I don't put an actress to that because it's a CG character. There's no Andy Serkis.
Well, there's a motion capture,
but it isn't Andy Serkis as Caesar because that guy's actually that's his face.
Yeah. You know? I get it.
That's different. I don't know what the line is, but right. Whatever line there is, it's not crossing that. So I guess I didn't see that as a great performance. I guess I saw it more as a great work of CG art and a computer designing and art designing, right?
I guess
good storytelling.
Yeah. Also.
Because he had to make up dialogue and they had to be simple. So I think that's why I made it easier. Yeah, so maybe that's the problem. It's just, it was covered with today's technology more than it should have.
Yeah.
That's possible. That's why the original, not the original, the 80s, the thing, always work out, will always scare the shit out of me because of the practical effects of it.
Right. Practical effects are crazy.
Compared to most of it today. Although there's some retro going on, for sure. Anything you want to say before we get to the spoiler zone?
I mean, no. We might as well just jump in.
Yeah, I know. There isn't much to say. So, spoilers for Valerian starting now.
Welcome to Alpha, the city of 1,000 planets.
Alex, can you update us?
I'd be delighted to. The Alpha station has grown 7% this year. And since it left the terrestrial orbit, it has traveled almost 700 million miles.
Population?
Almost 30 million. 3,236 species from the four corners of the universe live on board, pooling their knowledge and cultures. Over 5,000 languages spoken, not counting the various computer languages.
Demographics?
To the south are the submerged parts with 800 species living in all kinds of liquids, such as the peaceful Polong farmers who grow cobalt. To the north, we have gaseous lands dominated by the Azin Mo, whose extreme sensitivity makes them specialists in neurosciences and molecular components. They can build cells of any kind.
So what did you think of the plot?
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, okay, well, crazy is one word. I say, look, I really like how the Mullians. That sounds like isn't that like an Italian term? No, that's not. It's close to something else. Never mind, I almost said the term. See, so the Mules, I like that they got a jump start back. They got a fresh start.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was going to be about them until like, not halfway in the movie, but like until I found out, right? I was like, oh, I thought there was just an opening to something. Like, because my first thought was that he was just getting, I really thought that they were doing, because I'm like, Luc Besson's really going out there. Like, I thought when the planet was blowing up and the ship crashed and all the rubble was chasing her, the queen or the princess, whatever.
Princess.
And she like turned into that blue thing and then went straight to Dane DeHaan.
Yeah.
He was dreaming that. I thought that was his past life.
Oh, see, that's why I thought
he was going to tap into something and it was going to be about the character. I'm like, I saw a way better movie and then so the movie told me, it's not that at all, Oscar. Stop being stupid.
Yeah.
And like, oh, God damn it. Because that would have been about the character and this awesome story. But no, they separate those two and then, you know, focus on one more than the other.
Right.
Unfortunately. But I still like their, you know, that they got their shit and they got their their arc redeemed, you know, and they got their planet back in a ship size. That was cool and very inventive and not entirely clear, but this is a universe full of unclear things that we don't understand. And it's basically magic. And I like, that's another thing I liked about this movie. And part of the world building, what magic is to another planet,
yeah,
is science to,
this, science
one.
To this one. Yeah.
That's really cool.
It's really, yeah.
The bizarre. I want you to describe the bizarre to me, because I think that's really cool for people. I mean, what you were talking about earlier, I just love talking about it. Like,
well,
interdimensional shopping.
Yeah, it's interdimensional shopping.
That's so cool.
It's multi-levels of craziness, yeah. And you need special goggles and
all you do
gloves.
Is standing in a field.
Yeah. All yeah. you're doing is standing in a field and walking in a field. And
yeah, and that guy with all the guys, with the wife, and like, only what we can carry.
Right, exactly, yeah. yeah. It was super
it's
fun
like
to
every,
watch.
It's like every planet has this.
Right.
Like, yeah. you can't escape
it was super fun
the throngs
to watch
of
because,
marriage in every planet.
Right, right. Yeah. It was super fun to watch because you get to see this crazy, like, we don't see anything, like, at all. And in the physical world, in this planet, nothing exists. Like, yeah. it's just there. It's just sand, right? There's certain things that are there in the physical world. But in this other alternate dimension, which is the virtual, I guess, world almost, right? It's this crazy bazaar, like this crazy shop
mm-hmm.
Or shops that is multi-level faceted. It's bonkers. Like, you need special equipment to get in there to see things, to play around in things. And I actually like that. The beginning things actually seemed really cool, very spy-esque. And I thought it was really cool. I thought it was a really cool little intro to, I guess, what his job is, right, as the major.
Yep. Now let's get into Clive Owen.
Which I think is the weakest part of the movie.
Me too.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the plot goes.
Yeah, he's just so, two-dimensional, man. He's just nothing.
He looks like he's phoning it in. And this is the motherfucker that was in Children of Men, you know. And like,
sure.
He can show it off, for sure. I'm interested. I mean, maybe he was directed this way. Who cares? I mean, who knows?
Right. Well, he's not as prominent as we feel he is in the movie.
Yeah, that
he's only in really like 5 scenes.
Right.
He's really not much, but he is an overlying
threat. Second in command,
he's
more in command in screen time.
Right, exactly.
Than he is.
Right, yeah, that is true. And that guy,
kidnapping scene was cool, though.
That kidnapping scene was cool,
yeah,
right, was exactly.
Cool.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, but I still feel like those 5 scenes, just Clive Owen, I don't know, something about it. It's not his acting, it's just something just
yeah.
didn't click. Maybe the dialogue wasn't right for him or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the dialogue was, definitely very poor in the movie, in my opinion.
Sure.
Rihanna. Not bad?
That was good. I mean, we didn't need that at all. But,
right, and we talked about this earlier, too. Right?
But it was
none
fun
of these
to watch.
We needed,
and actually, Valerian kind of makes fun of it also. Was like, okay, that's awesome. Like, I don't need this. Like, he kind of says that. Like, I don't need this. Like, but
and now I know
time,
why he got that second gun, too. That was nice foreshadowing.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Not foreshadowing, but like, nice show of his intellect.
Exactly.
As far as an operative goes.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah, but it was cool to see that, and then she's a different type of species. And,
completely different. Yeah,
completely different. Something, you know, because she doesn't have an identity or whatever.
That's another good thing about this movie.
Ditto.
Every time someone says, like, oh, I'm looking for this modulator, you think a machine.
Yeah.
It's a creature.
Yeah, it's a creature.
He's
yeah.
asking for some sort of thing that sounds like a suit that changes the way he looks.
Yeah.
No, it's a creature that attaches to him.
Right.
It's a living thing
right.
with its own sense and being. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Every
yeah.
time,
after she changed everything,
very
he was like, I was still waiting for him to go, where's the modulator?
Right.
But that was it.
And then when he was taking it, I'm like, at first I thought, I was like, oh, he took the wrong thing. That's how much I didn't believe it was that
right.
little fucking thing. But it was. It was a little dragon thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so cool. Like little Bowser.
Right. Yeah, it did look like a little.
Look, a fat Spyro.
Yeah, no, I guess. Yeah.
Well, different color, but
sure.
Fat Spyro. And there's another one I'm thinking of, like a minion in a game.
Yeah,
it looks just like it.
I can't think of what, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, those are really cool.
Yeah,
and I love how the movie.
There is some really cool stuff.
I never get thrown off like
that.
What
I'm saying, the world building is done better than what was that movie we just talked that we said. The one we were just talking about, the Wachowskis.
Jupiter Ascending.
Jupiter Ascending, like that. There's a big difference.
Right.
There's a contrast there.
For sure. That one just focused on like one family's wealth or something.
Yeah, that's a really, really narrow
and
in
also,
comparison to this.
We hate that actor. We love to hate that actor. What's the name?
Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Yeah, that actor. I'm trying to think of his name.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, and that plot was just bad. I mean, it was obvious once they got into the Like, I love the... It was in the trailer when he was running through the thing and he had this... He turned into the juggernaut. He was pushing.
Like, yeah, the suit and he just...
The momentum did all the work for him.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but after that and he discovered that they're in the forbidden zone, there's not radiation. I'm like, oh, it's Skybone. It was pretty obvious. I'm like, okay, of course. And then once it was obvious, even when they spell it out, like, it just wasn't fun about the plot.
Yeah, I didn't know if this movie was trying to be more... attuned to kids at the same time. Like they dumbed it down because he's like, oh, we're trying to get the kids as well.
Right.
And so make it like a PG movie, not a PG-13 movie, right. Which I'm pretty sure it was a PG-13 movie.
I remember any swearing or nudity or anything.
No, I didn't see, but I'm saying, but it had enough action and it had enough, a lot of other.
Also, the great thing about this kind of world is that you can show all the blood and guts of an alien as much as you want.
Exactly, that is true. Right. Yeah, right.
You can attach jumper cables to what could be their nuts, you know?
Yeah.
And now no one's going to be like, okay, it's not human.
You can get away with a lot of things.
Right.
But I think they were trying to attract more to the kid crowd because it does feel like a kiddish movie, the way they're portraying it.
Sure, do talk that way.
Yeah. But I maybe that's where they dumbed it down and they should have just been more adult about it.
I mean, I don't remember Fifth Element being dumbed down like that.
Huh?
I mean, it's ridiculous, but Fifth Element, for example.
I know Fifth Element wasn't, I didn't feel dumbed down either.
It felt more adult-y,
right? It felt more adultish, yeah.
I don't know, maybe. Maybe we're just projecting a lot.
It could be.
And I'm sorry to compare it, but it's just so obviously comparison.
Well, it's the same director. Come on. We're allowed to compare
it. It's like if I compare Funny Games, the American, to the original. Right.
Exactly.
The same
guy. It's the same director.
Yeah.
It's also something about where alien races and a bunch of different things going on.
And it's also
it's kind
of like
a futuristic kind of thing.
It's made to look like his comeback, and it's in the comeback in the style that we all love him for. Right.
Listen, the movie looks great. I had fun watching it. Some cool action scenes.
I may watch it again for sure.
A lot of stuff. Yeah, I actually wouldn't mind watching it again overall.
For sure.
But it's a movie I can totally watch it while playing on video game on my phone.
But it just lacks some fundamentals. Like the reason Mad Max Fury Road is. It's one of the best, for me anyway, for a lot of people too, the best action movies ever made, at least in this 2000s era we're in, or even before that probably, is because it was also, on top of being a great action movie, also well acted, also well written, also well structured, also meticulously made. It took years and
right.
to see all the work. Like, it also becomes those things.
Right.
It's not just a great genre thing. It's also all these other things. That
right,
make it
exactly.
10 out of 10 out of 10 out of 10. So I just wish this movie could have been it for that. But it's still pretty cool to watch and very, very, very good in aspects. I don't have anything else really to say. Unless you want to favor a particular scene or a particular thing or technology or something like that that you want to talk about, we could geek out about it. What did you think of the... I love how the weapons in this movie are also creatures. Like the guy, like the creature that attacks the bus.
Yeah.
Which is... I'm like, it looks too much like a human bus.
Right.
I'm like, is that like a byproduct of us like infecting societies?
Yeah.
And I'm like, how much influence did we have?
Right.
I'm like, I think it's almost like... And this is just me speculating. Because again, that intro... Made me think a lot. That intro, I just love that song.
That really intro.
I think the song I just love too much.
Yeah, anyway. That's true also.
And, but that intro kind of goes with a lot of, like, maybe humans got everyone together. Like, we're the UN. Like, we're like, hey, we should start a UN.
That's kind of what it felt like.
And probably really is.
That's kind of what it felt like. Humans brought everything together.
And I think we got a lot of leeway from that.
Yeah, they were like, listen, you don't bring a lot to the table.
But we're clearly the weakest fucking species.
Right, we don't bring a lot to the table. Except for, I guess, manpower if we really need to.
Right.
But
multiply like
that. Right, exactly. Other than that, unity. So there's something good about us in the end.
I thought of Rick and Morty unity. Right on. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. But yeah, I like how they use that as a weapon. So I didn't ask about this, but what did you think of Rihanna's thing? Because Rihanna's, that's not her name in the movie. But I don't remember her name. It was like a strange name. She's in three scenes. I mean, that opening scene, of course, Ethan Hawke was weird, and he like came in on set for one day, like, hey, can I just be an asshole? Sure.
It did feel like that. Yeah.
All right. He's like the slimiest Ethan Hawke I've ever seen, and I just saw him again taking lives, which is on Netflix. I love watching that movie. He's such an asshole in that movie. Anyway. So Rihanna is in three scenes essentially, and he helps him escape. On his promises that he's going to help her escape, which sounded convincing enough, sure. Whatever.
Well, not even escape, help
but
her
like,
become a citizen.
And then she dies, and the movie plays as if we've known her for the whole movie. And it almost, like I told you earlier today, that it almost worked. It almost was enough to me, like, oh, okay, I care. about this character dying suddenly when I don't think she deserves it. But, like, it also didn't make total sense.
It does feel like there's something missing. It does feel like there's something, maybe another scene.
Time
in general would have been better, but there's a lot going on in this movie that's crammed into your specifically trying to, because you're always trying to do something in this movie. Our heroes are always doing something that needs to get done right away, right? Either saving each other, because that's a lot of things that happens in the movie, or trying to save the Admiral, or, you know, things of that nature. They're always trying to get somewhere quick. So every detour they take has to be rushed, you know? So Rihanna's thing, although it doesn't feel rushed, it's still really short. It's like a grand total of like 10 to 15 minutes. Yeah. You know, it's nothing huge.
Yeah.
But you do feel for her at the same time because of this, what she could have been, you know, or what she could have brought to the table later.
For me, it was like almost there. I love the fishing thing.
Butterflies
as bait, as like cosmic baits or something. And like, I got one. And, okay, the scariest scene was that weird creature. The people that were fishing, that race of people, forcing Loreline to wear a dress or like giving her all these options.
Yeah,
her smile freaked the fuck out of me.
Me too. Yeah.
Okay, so it's just me.
Yeah, I don't know. That freaked me out.
That's the scariest.
Well, what's funny is that she was a dish.
Yeah, of course.
That's cool. Yeah,
she was a dish and she was a dish.
Yeah,
that was cool. I didn't see that coming. Another one where I didn't see it coming. Like, why does she have those fucking huge lemons?
Yeah,
thank you. I was confused with red.
And it was just to add flavor.
Oh, my God. Like, oh. I like, that makes sense. I'm like, that's why they forced a gigantic, I thought it was a mariachi hat at first, white hat on her. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Another thing I just can't see this movie coming. And those details. I just wish it focused more on the plot, as far as not seeing coming, than this stuff. But
yeah,
that's cool. So I think that's it, right? I'm Valerian.
Yeah, overall.
So we recommended. I think we were recommending all these three movies.
It was fun to watch.
In different ways, all these three movies. Like, all three are for different kinds of people, maybe. Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, in theaters right now. And that's the reason why we're posting this late, by the way. Sorry about that, fellows and ladies, of course. So let's exit our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. Don't forget always to remember to send us feedback and your thoughts on our opinions on podmoviecast@gmail.com. Also, otherpodcast.com. Go to our website, please. All our shit's there. Give us an iTunes rating. That'd be amazing. Or whatever podcast catcher you have. Or what's another one? Google Play is another one, right? If there is a rating system for that, too, that'd be great if you could send us a review or give us 5 stars. Well, not even a review, just fucking the stars. No one wants to write anything. I don't want to write anything. I'm just talking about it. You can follow my shit, though, on Letterboxd and on Twitter at Armand Filmmaker. That's Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ralph?
You could follow me at Gamer Ralph with 2 R's and an F. And you could follow me on Twitch at Sue Trauma. I stream every Tuesday and Thursday nights.
Very nice. I also produce another podcast called SOS-Radio, which you can find at sos-radio.com. Don't forget the dash, because without the dash, it's a church group.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go to that church group. Oh, I have to go. I have to go on that website now.
You have to, yes. I haven't listened to it. I think Jay did.
Oh, it's a podcast also?
It's a podcast. That's the name of the podcast. SOS Radio, but SOS-Radio is our show.
Yeah.
Okay, just, you know, let's just, you're focusing on the wrong thing.
Right.
Anyway, and we deal with supernatural shit.
So do they.
Could be aliens. That's true. Oh my God, wow. It could be aliens. It could be Satanism, which is a form of religion.
Could be Christ.
It could be ghosts, mini ghosts, and a lot of spirits and negative energies. And I'm promoting it. I haven't promoted it recently because I haven't promoted it on that show. But I'm promoting it now because I'm going on a trip very soon to we're landing in Vegas, but we're going to be in Nevada. We're going to hit the desert. We're going to hit ET Highway. We're going to hit Area 51, or as close as it'll let us get to it. And we're going to do, we have a lot of interviews.
Probably to Area 52.
In the area.
Yeah.
52, that's in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Watch, just shut up. So yeah, that's going to be happening.
Maybe Area 50, you never know.
Early to mid-August, and we're going to start producing shows late August. How about that? It's going to be fun.
Cool.
What else here? Oh, do you know what our bonus episode is for this month, Rob?
No.
It is a little, yeah.
Why?
About a teenage spider thing.
Wait, it's his homecoming, right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it is.
That's so stupid.
Wait, yeah. Why? Why was that stupid? That was perfect.
Because he's so corny.
What was I supposed to be?
I don't know. No, you're right. I don't know. Right. I should have expected that.
Sure.
Anyway, we're about this week's this month's bonus is Spider-Man Homecoming, and you can find all that information at our website. For now, you can donate to the show, so you can get that episode. The sooner the better.
Man. Spoiler alert.
I might have a special guest for that episode too.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah,
it was a fun movie.
Oh, dude, everyone's seen it by now. I know you've seen it, motherfucker. You out there who's listening right now in their car or while you're jogging.
For that dumbass who missed it, though, spoiler alert.
Fucking
super fun movie.
Right, it's a fun movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're gonna geek out. I have an expert who's read all the comics and knows that shit.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to get him on and see what we can talk about. I already have fights on him. I'm going to nitpick his shit. It's going
to
be fun. Anyway.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to him about the current Spider-Man issues.
All right. Anyway, so remember, we are a bi-weekly show. We come out every other Friday. Next time, well, normally every Friday. This one comes out on Saturday. Sorry, folks. Next time, on August 4th, we'll be finishing our marathon. The marathon we put on hold briefly for our top fives and for this review of three films. Do you know what those three films are? The last three animated feature marathon films we picked.
Let's
see if you remember.
Yeah. One is Whisper of the Heart.
Nice, because that's yours.
The other one is Grave of the Fireflies.
That's mine.
And then the last one is...
The Better Inception.
Right. No, it's... oh, my God. What was the name of it?
Paprika.
No. See, I was going
to... Oh, you were playing one.
Yeah, I was playing.
I thought you didn't know.
Paprika, yeah.
Okay. Well, fuck me, I guess.
That's okay.
Yeah. So, Paprika, Grave of the Fireflies, Whisper of the Heart. Three Japanese older films. Actually, each... One from the 80s, one from the 90s, one from the early aughts.
Early aughts, yeah.
So, yeah. That
is true, actually, yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
By the way, if you watched Grave of the Fireflies or you plan on watching Grave of the Fireflies, I feel sorry for you.
Yeah, don't watch it with, like, a loved one. Or maybe you do. I don't know. Maybe a bit cathartic.
You're gonna hug each other and probably cry.
Not probably.
If you don't cry, just unfriend me. Like, stop following everything I do.
Yeah, don't listen to any more shows.
Just don't listen to any more shows. You're the worst.
That's awful. Anyway, the reason we're finishing it...
no, they're awful.
Later, we're awful for saying that they're awful
For something that hasn't happened yet?
Yeah, for something that's okay. Cool. No one's going to watch that. I mean, I wish they would. More people should watch them. That's why we're doing these marathons. Anyway, the reason we're finishing it then is because I'll be on my trip in the middle there, so we're recording those episodes.
Right.
We actually record half of it already in advance. So that's cool. And then Luke's portions.
Luke's pointer, yeah.
He sent me two of them, too. He hasn't sent me Grave yet of the Firefly.
Bitch.
He's saving that one last, I think.
Yeah.
But he did see it. He said it was devastating.
Oh, well, yeah.
He hates me right now for choosing that
movie. It is a devastating movie.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's it. Until next time, my dear listeners, I am Oscar.
And Ralph.
See you later.
You will not remember the last hour and a half of what you have just seen. You will forget the contents of this movie.
I might be going to work. I don't think so. Probably do that too.
So you might be going to work?
I will be going to work, so I might leave it anyway.
I thought you said I might be going to work. I was like, bitch, you just said like 10 minutes ago, laying on the couch, I worked tomorrow.
I'm this close from, I have three more work days before like my vacation kicks in.
So you don't want to go to work?
I don't want to work at all. Zero times. You know what it reminds me of? I'm trying to think of the movie exactly, but it's a Cronenberg movie. I think it might be... that weird bug movie, Naked Lunch, where in it they go to, you know, when they're in the bazaar area in the Middle East, wherever they're in the fake dream, I don't know where they're at actually, but whatever. And they're in the shops and they're selling a bunch of bug stuff. Yeah. And one of the bug stuff is like, give you like centipede sticks or whatever. And one of them was this green powder that looked just like matcha, but they called it some sort of specialty bug. Like powdered, you know, pounded into a powder thing. I'm like, every time I see matcha, I think of that sometimes. Probably why I never drink it.
Because probably.
It just looks really gross in the movie.
Yeah, it's a very specific memory.
Yeah, very specific. I've seen that movie like a few times. That's not a problem. So, personal chopper, dude. What did you... Oh, yeah. Let's just skip the ending for now. But what do you think of the... What did you think of the movie overall? Like,
I mean, you could have named this movie... The medium personal shopper, like, or
wait, no, because that would sound like an American film. Medium personal shopper.
But isn't this an American film?
No,
it's not.
No, the guy Olivier Sias is like French Belgium or something.
Okay,
yeah, he's all European, that dude.
It's all in English. It's like 90% English.
Yeah, well, Kristen Stewart doesn't know another language.
Yeah.
I mean, and he likes Kristen Stewart. He worked with her in the last...
Obviously, he likes Kristen Stewart. She was naked, like, in six seasons.
Yeah, that's true. Like, three, but... No, she was in his last movie.
Three elongated scenes.
The Clouds of Sils Maria, which is, like, half French, half English.
Okay.
And...
So, I had a problem in the beginning, maybe the first...
But the guy travels all around.
25 minutes?
Yeah.
They were talking in French, and I was just like, oh, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, good. Trailer for what?
Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, your first trailer of that?
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen three times already. What do you think?
I think he's a little pretentious for calling himself the greatest detective.
And also, is the director? Huh? That's Kenneth Branagh. He directed the movie, isn't he?
Did he?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know.
I was going to say, I was able to check, but...
I wasn't paying attention. You're going to check on your shitty phone?
I'm still going to use it. It's great. I can still use it for things. I'm going to put, like, a lot of music in here.
You can still use it?
I'm using it right now.
Oh, but on Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I can put shit in here, download them.
Technically...
Yeah, what? Second, I touch...
You can take your phone with that also with you, and I'd Pokemon Go work if you have a double accounts.
I do have...
They're going to have mobile hotspots over there.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, I know. They won't. Well, maybe I'll take it as an in case.
Yeah, yes.
In case we separate and, like, Brian's like, give me the Moldress. Fine, but you have to give me the fucking...
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Because...
You just stay logged in as him.
Yeah. What am I reviewing? Murder on the...
You know, what you're looking for is murder. We're not reviewing murder.
No, we're not reviewing murder. Not this time. It. Why would I look at the fucking scenario? Okay. Directed by Kenneth Branagh. Fucker directed it and wrote it. I mean, directed it and it starts. Sorry. So, anyway. Fucking big-headed bitch. Oh, wait. I should probably bust out. Oh, Jesus. Like, my first day. Why didn't you tell me it was my first day?